Good evening. We're good to go? Okay. Good evening. Welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Today is Tuesday, February 4th, 2020, and we're at the Veterans Memorial Building at 209 Surf Street. We have a full complement here, so I will, we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. Could we please have a moment of silence and to get the meeting started? All right, thank you. Those able, please rise, face the flag, and begin the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin. Thank you. Do we have any Planning Commissioner announcements? Okay. At this point, we'll open up the meeting for public comment. This time is typically used for items that are not on the agenda.
Chair Lure, if you don't mind, we skipped that we need to do the election of chair and vice chair before we move on to that.
You're very right. Thank you very much. I got in a rote mode there. Okay, so this is always awkward for me. Always awkward. So do we have any comment or any recommendations for the chair and vice chair?
I nominate Jerry for chair.
I'll second.
No. Any further nominations?
Do you want to do it again? No.
Okay.
I nominate Jesse for vice chair.
You have a second?
And I will second that.
Okay, awesome. Okay, we have a motion of for chair and vice chair. Do we need to call roll on this, or
not a roll call vote, just a voice vote? Do them separately.
Do them separately.
Yeah.
Okay. For chair, we have I've been nominated and seconded. Seems like I should abstain. So I guess I'll call the question on that. So all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Passes. Motion passes. And then for vice chair, we have Jesse with the first and the second. Any discussion on that? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. So
I abstained.
Welcome, Jesse. Thank you, Michael. Okay, then, now, after being corrected, we'll have the public comment period. And this item is for, this time is for people, for items that are not on the agenda or for people who can't stay, or for typically items that that are on the consent calendar. So anybody wishing to speak, please come forward and state your name.
Hello, I'm Sean Green, Morro Bay. I just wanted to thank the commission and staff. A couple meetings ago, you took quite seriously the coastal access obstructions at the Giovanni's property, and that means a lot to me. So I appreciate that. I haven't seen a ton of movement on that yet, but I trust that that will continue to be reviewed. In particular, the walking path on the south side of the property. So I very much thank you guys for taking that seriously. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Gene Dowdy. As you may know, I'm an architect. I do mostly work on the waterfront. I'm concerned about two issues, and they're related. It has to do with parking on the west side of the Embarcadero. Morro Bay is a vehicular destination. Most of the visitors arrive by a car. My concern has to do with the proposed elimination of the established parking and the potential loss of handicapped parking. I read from a staff report, City Morro Bay staff report, in the 1960s, the state of California, by designating the lands west of the Embarcadero as a public trust land owned by the state, the City of Morro Bay assumes the trustee of this granted land upon a corporation 1964 and 1965. The Tidelands Grant is Morro Bay. The Tidelands Grant in Morro Bay is perpetually provided in perpetuity, provide the city conform to the terms of the legislative grant. The legislative grant states the granted land must be used for commerce, fishing, navigation, recreational purposes, parkland, public access, and public parking. The city of Morro Bay installed the parking on the west side of the Embarcadero, and they complied with that regulation and that legislative grant. It appears to me that the city, as well as Coastal Commission, are either unaware or chooses to ignore this legislative grant. I'm in the process of designing two, or at least one, or maybe two lease sites that are front the lease site, the street ends. The city has asked me to eliminate the existing parking on one of these street ends, expand the building into the street, eliminating the existing parking and potential handicap parking for that site. I think the city and or the state need to comply with our legislative grant agreement.
Okay.
Questions?
No questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Anybody else wish to speak? Okay, I'll close public comment at this point. Scott, do you have any responses for either of those comments?
I think we're managing the Tidelands Trust properties as we're supposed to be managing them. It's completely within the discretionary authority, of the city to remove parking along those areas. We provide parking up and down the west side of the street, as you're aware. We also provide, economic opportunities up and down the west side of the Embarcadero in the form of the retail establishments, the restaurants, the commercial fishing, supporting businesses, those types of things. So I think we're doing a good job of that.
And any projects would come before us?
That's correct.
Proposed projects, so
that's
they
correct.
Would be reviewed individually?
Yep.
Okay. Scott, is there any update on the lateral access issue?
We are bringing that item back before the Planning Commission at your next scheduled Planning Commission meeting for review.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, we have next item is presentations, and we have none. At this point, we have the consent calendar, and there are three items on the consent calendar. Does anybody wish to discuss or pull in any of the items? Okay. Do I have a motion?
I'll move that we accept the consent calendar.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next up is item B1. This is CDP 19-039, CUP 19-13, and LTM 19-06. This is a project located at 295 Atascadero Road in Morro Bay. And at this point, we usually have a staff report.
Do an ex parte.
Okay, I'm sorry. Does anybody have any ex parte communications they'd like to? Okay.
I accidentally had ex parte communications with the SWCA environmental consultant on this job, Randy Cummings. So if anybody needs to elaborate on that, I'll be happy to. So.
I, on purpose, had conversations with the Patels and with Kathy Novak.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's basically it.
And I discussed this item with staff, previously. Okay. Getting that, housekeeping out of the way, are we ready with the staff report?
We are. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. Okay. Thank you. This item, is 295 Atascadero Road. It is a request for coastal development permit and conditional use permit approval. Before I begin, there were some public comment letters that came in after the staff report was published. Those six letters have been put on the dais before you. There are also letters available for the public. In addition, we also had a letter from Walsh Engineering that was received this afternoon. There has been a letter for each of the commissioners provided, as well as letters for the public, which is on a public table over there by the computer. This project is located at 295 Atascadero Road. This project was previously reviewed as a conceptual review item at the Planning Commission on January 15th, 2019. No action was taken at that meeting. That meeting, as our conceptual review process is, was to allow for initial public comment on a new application. Specifically, the project was brought forward back at that time to the Planning Commission to provide input related to the property's visible location adjacent to Highway 1 and Atascadero Road. As you see on the screen, the property location is outlined in red. And specifically, under the plan development overlay with considerations regarding height and parking for this project. And the applicant, or excuse me, the Planning Commission did provide feedback to the applicant on the design of the building, landscaping, and the significant public benefit that was proposed as offering on this project. So you'll see in my presentation tonight the applicant's response to the Planning Commission feedback received. No. Okay. Yeah, I was checking that that works, and I see that it does. But oh wait, it just worked.
I just did that.
Oh, you did that. Okay, you did it at the same time that I pressed the button.
Oh, the wonders of technology!
It's like magic. Okay, thanks. So this is the image that we'll be discussing in the. This is the image of the proposed project that I'll be discussing in the presentation tonight. This is also the simulation that's shown on the front page of the plans. This particular simulation is showing the revised project from the southeast elevation at the, and off to the right is the off-ramp to Atascadero Road and Highway 1, the southbound off-ramp. Next slide, please. The project's zoning designation is commercial visitor serving. As I said, it's also in the plan development overlay. And the purpose of the plan development overlay zone is to provide for detailed and substantial analysis of development on parcels which, because of location, size, or public ownership, warrant special review. This project is greater than an acre. It is a two-acre parcel and therefore requires both Planning Commission review as well as City Council review. The job of the Planning Commission is to forward a recommendation to the City Council upon its review of the project, and that is the purpose of tonight's hearing. In the plan development overlay, the overlay zone is also intended to allow for modification or exemption of development standards of the primary zone, which would otherwise apply if such action would result in better design or other public benefit. A finding of greater than normal public benefit is required by the Planning Commission to allow for such modifications. Next, please. Specifically, the project is a new construction of a 56,358 square foot, 83 guest room hotel. It would include indoor pool, fitness room, meeting room, interior dining and lounge areas, and on-site parking, including 92 vehicle spaces and 19 bicycle parking spaces. Previously, in 2019, the project at that time only proposed 90 spaces. Two additional spaces have been added, and I will speak about that later in the parking section of my presentation. The project hotel would be proposed to be three stories tall and requires a modification under the PD overlay for both height and parking design standards. The proposed height of the hotel is 35.4 feet. As I said, plans have been revised since the 2019 conceptual review. Next, please. So included with the project is the proposed public benefit to meet the finding requirement that the PD overlay requires. This public benefit includes 9 electric vehicle charging stations that would be open to the public, and there is a condition on the project accordingly. These EV charging stations would include 7 level 2 and 2 level 3 charging stations. Level 3 is also known as DC fast chargers. Notably, there are no level 3 charging stations along the Highway 1 corridor. This also includes one of the EV stations that would be ADA accessible. And secondly, the project includes extension of the Class 1 bike lane across the property frontage. The intent of those improvements would be as a 12-foot multi-use path for both bicyclists and pedestrians. Excuse me. Next slide. Additionally, it includes a proposal of a dedication of a stub portion to Morro Bay High School for use as extension of their bike lane adjacent to their eastern driveway entrance. And applicant has reached out to the school district property, and they are in agreement with this. And then it also includes various green measures such as net zero energy, bike share, recycled content, building materials, LED lighting, reflective roofing, permeable pavers, high performance glazing system, and et cetera. There is a complete list in the project plans. Okay, next slide, please. At the conceptual review hearing, the Planning Commission gave a number of items for the applicant to consider, and these are itemized here on the screen, 1 through 12. Rather than read through this list, I will just go through these point by point in the next few slides. So next slide, please. So number one, the growth canopy of the trees, that was discussed by Planning Commission, whether or not the canopy of trees would extend into the Caltrans right-of-way. The applicant has confirmed that the canopies as proposed would not encroach into the Caltrans right-of-way, and all proposed trees have been picked from the city's street tree list. Undergrounding of utilities, the applicant is proposing to underground the portion along Atascadero Road. They are not proposing to underground along the Highway 1 side of the property. Since the 2019 meeting, an engineering cost estimate was submitted, which concluded that just the Highway 1 side only, the engineering cost for that would a total approximately $449,000, and this was also reviewed in the environmental study, the mitigated negative declaration, which found that to be cost infeasible based on the amount of benefit for related to the cost. Number three, please. Actually, can we go back a slide? Just wanted to add, so for number two, what I was trying to also say is that it was found to be cost prohibitive relative to the project and also would likely provide little view improvement in the area because of the Monterey cypress trees in the background and the future construction of the hotel. Next slide, please. Architectural design. Planning Commission gave feedback on the architectural design and found that the original design was not reflective of Morro Bay character and design, and asked that be revised. The applicants, as you'll see in the plans, has made significant changes to the architecture. Roof design has been changed to sloping roof along the south property in combination with extended vertical wall and parapet. The area of the south elevation has been reduced in height and to improve the line of sight from Highway 1 to Morro Rock. And in addition, the architectural design incorporates a more rustic harbor character, and the materials that they're now proposing include a Corten metal siding, standing seam metal shed roofs, and heavy timber columns. The rendering that previously was shown is representative of this architectural design. Number four, proposed mechanical design. The blade sign that was previously proposed has been removed, and the roof plan submitted that's in your plan package depicts the mechanical equipment in the center of the roof, and also includes the solar panels proposed. Next slide, please. Planning Commission asked for consideration of pitched roof design. The comment given was that sloped roof could be a benefit. Building articulation and window placement give heavy look to building facade. The items in that are underlined on the screen are the comments summarized or paraphrased from the Planning Commission. And in the revised plans, the project has been redesigned to reflect that more of a character and design. And number six, design modifications in height. The proposed height remains at 35.4 feet. However, with the change to the southern elevation, that line of sight and that portion of the building is improved from Highway 1 to Morrow Rock. Plan sheet A7 depicts this outline of change, and that I'll show you in an additional slide. And next slide, please. Parking shade study. The applicant has included a revised parking shade study in the plans. The study shows that 47% of the entire parking lot is shaded, with approximately 59% of the stalls shaded. It also illustrates the tree canopy at mature size, and the Planning Commission had asked for this to be noted on the plans, that it is now included on the landscaping plans, which includes the proposed height of the plans and proposed height of the tree, and also the tree species, and that's located on the landscaping sheets. Number eight, greater articulation of material. Plans have been revised to include more building articulation, varying the exterior materials. There has been a color and materials board, the physical board provided to you at the dais. An exhibit of this is included in the Planning Commission staff report as well. Next slide. Number nine, the Planning Commission requested that the height study include the blade height. This previous proposed blade sign has been removed. Number 10, Planning Commission's comment was to revise the landscape palette not appropriate for a marine environment. The revised plans and the applicant's response, to paraphrase, notes that the property perimeter includes existing Monterey cypress trees. The landscaping simulation is shown on plan sheets A0, 13, and 14. The revised landscaping that has been proposed by the applicant takes into consideration constraints between planting landscaping that's tall enough to screen the property while avoiding Caltrans encroachments, and yet also not conflicting with a city waterline easement that runs through the length of the parking lot on the east side. Next slide. And then the last two comments from the commission were that more public benefit would be required for this height exception. Applicant noted in their response that the proposal notes the public benefit offered, which includes the 9 electric vehicle charging stations, which is not currently a code requirement under our current code, and that would qualify for greater than normal public benefit, and that the charging stations would be made available to the public. Staff's noted in the staff report that this was something that early on in the project we had contacted the applicant regarding that and conveyed to them that is something that we've heard from the Air District, that there is definitely a need for electric vehicle charging stations. As I said earlier, there are no currently level 3 electric vehicle charging stations along the Highway 1 corridor, and it ties in well with the city's goals toward green building and sustainability. And then the last one, number 12, commission discussion regarding public benefit ideas and environmental benefits. The proposed project offers several public benefits, as noted previously, as well as economic benefit. The applicant discussed that in their response as well, that that there should be some consideration given as far as the economic benefit to the city. Staff agrees in that the project is consistent with City Council major adopted goals for 2019-2020. In fact, Council's number one goal is to achieve economic and fiscal sustainability. The project does align with that, and it's also consistent with the Economic Development Strategic Plan, the EDSP, that discussed this area of the city. Next slide. So that includes the applicant's response and summary of the comments that the Planning Commission gave in 2019. In the next several slides, I'll go through the development standards and then also review the visual simulations that we were received with this application. So as touched on, the project development standards. The project meets all development standards for the site, with the exception of height and parking. These development standards are shown here on the site. The front setback is proposed at 96 feet 8 inches. The building, as we discussed last year, has been situated as far north to the site as possible, while still maintaining fire department access and turnaround on that north side of the property. To maintain that view corridor or that view area along the south side of the property. Next slide, please. And so highlighted in yellow, these are the standards for which the applicant is requesting a modification under the PD overlay. In the CVS zone, the maximum requirement is 30 feet from average natural grade. They're proposing 35.4 feet. Under parking, there is a slight change from the proposal that you saw last year. In the last year's proposal, there were 90 spaces proposed, where 92 is a requirement. They are proposing to meet all 92 parking spaces. The one thing they are requesting a modification for is that our parking ordinance requires for landscape design standards that rectangular planter areas be planted after every five stalls. They do meet this on the east side of the property and portions of the northwest side of the property. Along the south side of the lot, they are proposing diamond-shaped planter areas, and this enables them to maintain that parking count of 92 because the size of the rectangular planter area, if they were to otherwise comply, would result in lost parking spaces. And then the requirement for bike parking, they do meet that bike parking requirement. One thing I wanted to point out on the height is the property is in a floodplain, and as we discussed last year, because the building is in a floodplain, our floodplain ordinance requires structures to be built 2 feet above base flood elevation unless otherwise floodproofed. There is a plan sheet in your packet that gives a depiction of this. The city engineer reviewed this project and determined that the project could be built 1 foot below base flood elevation if the first 3 feet are floodproofed, and that is what the applicant is proposing to do. The net effect is that it allows for the height to for the building to have less of a height impact than it would otherwise have if it wasn't floodproofed. If it wasn't floodproof, it would be correspondingly that much higher because of the floodplain requirements. Next slide, please. Here is the site plan. And on the screen, this is east is facing up. So Highway 1 is to the top of the screen, Atascadero Road on the or the south. Part of the property is on the right side of the picture, and then the row Monterey Cypress, which is discussed in the staff report, is along the south side. It's on the bottom of the screen, but it's the west elevation. Next slide, please. Here is a close-up of the east elevation, and it shows the revised roof line. And the proposed materials, the Corten siding, and the change in massing and window articulation. Next slide, please. here, and then next slide again. And then so here is just kind of, I zoomed in here. It's not very large on the plans, but it does show you the original outline of previous design and then the amount of area that has been opened up for views across Highway 1 southwest toward Morro Rock. Next slide, please. South elevation. Next slide. And then the west elevation, this would be looking toward the east. Next slide, please. And then north elevation, the property is adjacent to the high school, so this is looking from the high school parking lot toward the hotel. Next slide. So these next two images show the original and the revised design. So this is what the Planning Commission saw at the conceptual review meeting in January of last year. And the next slide shows the revised design. Excuse me, I want to catch up here with my slides here. Okay, next slide. In the next several images, you will see the revised visual simulations from the applicant. And this one here, this is a proposed image from the southbound Highway 1 off-ramp. And it depicts here in this area the change in the southern roof boundary. It does show some landscaping or some trees in the background here. And staff analysis determined that this is depicting the trees that are actually off property in between Lila Kaiser Park and City Corporation Yard. That's right. Yeah. Next slide, please. This is a slide that you saw at the beginning. This depicts the view from Atascadero Road looking toward the northwest. Next slide. This would be actually on the off-ramp and proposed fencing. Next slide. The color and materials board. So as stated in the staff report, the proposed material and color changes make use of more earth tones and neutral colors than what you saw in the original design, which was dominated by a lot of white colors. This is a more muted white color than what's depicted. Well, it's more muted than the original design, but it does come off more muted than what you see in the color renderings. The staff has provided the color board for you. Notable about this particular design is the more rustic or harbor style character that is more reflective of Morro Bay character. Next slide. Pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act, an initial study was prepared, which resulted in a mitigated negative declaration. And this MND was circulated to the State Clearinghouse for the required 30-day period. We did receive two letters during that review period. These letters are included as an exhibit. They are from the Air Pollution Control District and Caltrans. Their comments have been incorporated into the mitigation and monitoring plan. With mitigation, all impacts have been reduced to less than significant. You will see in the exhibit where their comments have been incorporated. It's noted in track change formatting. So upon adoption of the MND, that would be incorporated into a final mitigated negative declaration. So impacts identified related to aesthetics, air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, energy, geology, soils, greenhouse gas emissions, land use and planning, transportation, and tribal cultural resources. These have all been incorporated into a mitigation and monitoring plan. That plan, or MMP for short, is incorporated as conditions of approval on the project. Specifically, most notable mitigation is in regards to aesthetics. And aesthetics mitigations are included to reduce the perceived large mass and rectilinear character of the hotel building. It is a long, narrow property. It kind of limits some of that, you know, as a hotel use that's consistent with the zone and the land use. It does kind of lend itself to that. In response to that, there are aesthetic mitigations on the property that require landscaping screening, that within 10 years it would be required to screen 50% of the property. And so you will note that that's also in the MMP. In addition, I'll save that. Next slide, please. Continuing on the landscaping mitigations, part of the environmental review included more detailed analysis on the proposed landscaping. We did get a letter from the project landscape architect to address the landscape screening measures, and that was evaluated as part of the environmental review. That letter from the architect is included as an attachment to the staff report. It includes the goal to include broader and faster growing species. As I stated, that mitigation requirement would require the project to provide a minimum of 50% coverage. And the Planning Commission did weigh in on previous landscaping choices. The proposed plans before you have been revised to be consistent with our city street tree list, and also to meet drought tolerant requirements, as well as state requirements for drought tolerance. Next slide, please. This is the parking shade study that I discussed earlier. The gray portion of the image reflects the shaded portion of the parking lot. Those blue areas reflect the unshaded parking areas. So this shows that the 59% of the parking would be shaded. The circles also represent the tree canopy at mature size. And that was revised since last year. Next slide, please. Sign program. The applicant has submitted, and it's Exhibit K in your staff report. It did not get included as a full-size sheet that will be included before City Council. But the sign plan is shown as an 11 by 17. It's Exhibit K. They are proposing a mix of two wall signs that would be along the south and east property frontage, and then as well as a monument sign at the entrance to the driveway. Because of the way that our sign code is currently, they are actually not at all anywhere close to going over their signage, just because they have such extensive building frontage. But they are proposing 155 square feet of signs, where 337 square feet would be allowed. Next slide, please. Here is an image of that. That shows the proposed locations. Next slide, please. Okay. The project is located in our general plan and our coastal land use plan in Planning Area 5, Planning Area 5 Morro Rock, which is how it's labeled. It acknowledges and recognizes the potential for increase in commercial visitor serving uses. Both the land use and the zoning are commercial visitor serving. Our city's visual resources policies 12.01 and 12.02 do address protection of scenic and visual qualities of coastal areas. As part of this analysis for general plan and LCP consistency, a view analysis was done at the last Planning Commission meeting when story poles were erected on the property. Were actually placed on site on January 3rd for the 10 days prior to the meeting. And I do have some images if the Planning Commission wants to see them, but excuse me a second. Yeah, so the story poles were erected to assist with that evaluation of the view impacts of the proposed project. And And this was also discussed in the MND. And the mitigated negative declaration concluded that those in evaluating those impacts of scenic vistas, noted that the elevation of the highway of Highway 1 is approximately 15 feet above the ground elevation of the project parcel. Review of the project site, story pole exhibits, and photo simulations indicate that the hotel structure would have minimal effect on the availability of views to Moore Rock, as seen from the Highway 1 main line, and that the duration of this blockage would be approximately 1 second and would be inconsequential in terms of its effects on the scenic vista. Staff did present additional photos of this impact and also do have video of that for those passengers or motorists, excuse me, traveling southbound on Highway 1. The video was taken as a passenger, obviously not as a driver. That was the conclusion of the MND. There are aesthetic mitigations, as I mentioned, to require screening of the building to provide for that. Next slide, please. And I just wanted to add, and before I go into the conclusion here, in that in regards to a view blockage, that in traveling northbound on Highway 1, the view impacts the cypress, the row of Monterey cypress trees to the west of the building provided that screening for the hotel that where no view impacts occurred if you're traveling northbound on Highway 1. Because of the angle of Highway 1 and the diagonal location of Moore Rock, and that temporary blockage was only noticeable on southbound Highway 1. In conclusion, as stated, City Council adopted major city goals for 2019 and 2020. They do include goal number one, which was achieve economic and fiscal sustainability. The applicant brought forth this project as a conceptual review item to the Planning Commission in January 2019. Planning Commission provided feedback, and that feedback has been addressed and is reflected in a revised project and plans that are before you this evening for your recommendation. Additionally, due to the plan development overlay, modification of development standards is allowed by Planning Commission when there is a finding of greater than normal public benefit. And in this case, the applicant is requesting modification for height and parking design standards as discussed in staff's evaluation. That greater than normal benefit finding can be met based on the project before you. Next slide, please. This was my next slide that I didn't realize that I had. Excuse me. Applicant has proposed public benefit that meets this finding of greater than normal benefit. To recap, those public benefits include the electric vehicle charging for general public use, the extension of a Class 1 bike lane multi-use path, and numerous green building features that have been incorporated into the plans. The resulting project supports the request for modification because it provides for an overall better design than what would have otherwise occurred with a strict interpretation of the code requirements, because it addresses the site constraints for this particular unique property. Next slide, please. So staff's recommendation is that the Planning Commission afford to City Council a favorable recommendation for adoption of the MND with the mitigation and monitoring plan and conditional approval of the project by adopting PC Resolution 0320, which includes your favorable recommendation and includes the findings and conditions of approval for the project as shown on site development plans dated January 9th, 2020. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, great. At this time, does anybody have questions for staff? Okay, Jesse, I'll start with you.
I just had one quick one. The it was stated that 19 bicycle parking was provided and 19 were required. Is that, was that accurate?
Yeah, we do have a requirement for bike parking.
Right, is it 19 though? I mean,
is it 19, yeah.
So they're just they're meeting that minimum standard.
Yeah, they're meeting it, yeah.
Okay. But they're not going above and beyond.
No, they're not proposing additional bike parking. Okay.
Joseph?
Cindy, I think I'm hearing that the bed tax associated with the hotel, it can be considered additional public benefits as opposed to normal benefits?
That's what the applicant is suggesting, is that there should be consideration by the city for the amount of TOT.
There's nothing explicit in, I didn't see anything explicit in the ordinance that would prevent that kind of an interpretation. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, there's nothing that that would tell us that we can't consider that as part of our findings, or your findings.
Michael?
Cindy, the bike sharing is not the same as the bike parking. Or does the bike sharing happen in the bike parking that's being provided?
I'm sorry, I'm not following the question.
I thought one of the public benefits was bike sharing.
There was a bike sharing program proposed, and so is that part of the existing bike parking, or is there additional bike parking for the bike share program?
They are not proposing additional parking beyond the 19 spaces. Regarding the details of the bike sharing program, we don't have any additional details than what's shown on the plans, so I would defer that question to the project representative.
The other question I had is when people claim the EV charging stations as public parking, those that would mean they're not segregated for the use of the owner's clients. They're open for the public in general?
Yeah, so they'd be open for the public in general, although a hotel guest could stay at the hotel and they could use that. When we say your parking requirement is 92 spaces, and if that those EV charging stations are included in the 92 spaces. But we don't count that against you if you're, providing alternative types of parking. It's still parking.
Okay, that's all I have for now.
Susan?
I have one more question.
Okay.
Kind of following up on Michael's question. So typically when you go into these places, you'll see signs, don't park here, or Chico's towing is going to tow you. Obviously that wouldn't apply to the EV charging stations. Would there be signage to that effect, or how would that work?
Yeah, so in the condition, in the resolution, it says that they have to be signed to be available for general public use. But like I said, hotel guests are included as part of the general public. So if you are a hotel guest and you have a, electric vehicle, you know, it's open to anyone.
Okay. Do we have any, we don't have any city ordinances yet to restrict the parking at those charging stations to the time they're actually being used, so that they couldn't be blocked by somebody, say, in a diesel truck or something, correct?
Right. We don't have anything in our current code. And we have two other EV charging, level two EV charging spaces in the city, and there's no particular signage there. It's flexible.
Okay, I got a couple of questions on that. They mentioned that the building is going to be floodproof to 3-foot level. Are windows allowed in that 3-foot zone that's supposed to be flood protected?
I'm not sure the answer on that. It'd be something we have to, we'd be looking at as part of the construction documents that are submitted to the city. Typically what you have, and you'll see this in the city of San Luis, in the downtown where they have the floodplain exists, you'll see the kind of channel iron that's, metal that's around the front of the doors, and they'll have either metal or wood gasketed panels that slide into them. I assume that's what the applicant's proposing, because there's some reference in one of the documents to the fact that they'd be manually installed, which is not dissimilar to Morbay Landing. They had the same issue, and they're not using channels. They're going to actually lag them into the surrounds next to the doors.
But typically they, like in Lower Marsh Street and stuff, they don't allow windows down in that floodproofing zone, and part of the articulation of the building is the inclusion of windows down to grade. So I think that if we can get that clarified, it'll probably be for the client. Will this height exclusion, will this set a precedent for other projects in the area?
No, because it's tied to the particular findings that you make for this particular project. So by definition, the PD overlay does not allow the Planning Commission to, it's really a project-specific case. So, you know, the idea of the finding is that you're saying that greater than normal public benefit or special design, something that was unique to this particular project. So, no.
Okay, I'll have further questions on that later. Jesse, do you have another question?
No.
Okay, anybody else? Okay. At this point, we'll open this up for public comment on this project. Typically, we have the applicant come forward first.
Good evening, Chair Luer and Commissioners. First, let me congratulate you on your reappointment as Chair. And Jesse, congratulations on your vice chair. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here representing the applicant for the 295 Atascadero Hotel project. Before I begin, I'd like to say that staff and the project team have undergone through an extensive and somewhat exhausting process to get back before the commission. I would like to thank all involved and the staff for the positive report and recommendation. We were here a little more than a year ago for the conceptual review and walked away with several comments from the commission for the design alternatives and other components for this project. From there, the architects and the project team members went to work on the best way to incorporate your suggestions and answer your questions. You have received a plethora of information on this project between the previous meeting and tonight, so I'd like to summarize the main changes and the other key elements, and staff has hit most of those already. And I also have received some comments and questions, so I'd like to address those. First, the architectural style was modified to better reflect the Morro Bay character. Specifically, the mix of sloping roofs provides a visual interest. Removal of the architectural blade lowers the requested height exception. The materials changed the metal roofs, siding with heavy timbers at the porte-cochere, and the third floor was reduced 780 square feet to accommodate the new shed roof, which reduces the perception of the building height and improves Morro Rock visuals with the lowered building corner. Second, the commission was concerned with the number of parking spaces, so the project parking lot now has been configured and shifted around and now has 92 spaces that's required. The third was, as staff has noted, we worked with them to increase the amount of landscaping. We have worked with the landscape architect to identify tree and plant materials from the city's approved list, while at the same time take into consideration such things as utility easement, drought-tolerant materials, appropriate plant sizes, distances to ensure better success and plant health, type of the tree for screening for the building, view impacts, and more. Fourth, several environmental elements have been included, such as solar, water conservation plumbing fixtures, LED lighting, recycled content building materials, high-performance glazing systems, a bioretention basin, guest recycling programs, and more. Fifth, I would like just to mention that we have met with the school district and have kept in communication with them on the project details. The school district is supportive of the project dedication and the new Class 1 bike lane across the frontage. In addition, we have talked to the school about any internship or hospitality-related programs. However, there are no specific programs that they offer except for the just one career opportunity in the springtime. The applicant has expressed an interest in participating in that just one program, and the description of the program is in your report. They must apply to the school district and get it accepted before they can actually get into the program. Last, for my summary, I would like to say that this project includes several public benefits with the Class 1 bike lane, 9 EV charging stations, including 2 fast level, 3 chargers on site, dedication of the property to the school district, various green measures for supporting sustainable city goals, and important economic resource for the city in the form of TOT. And I'll divert here for just a moment that the economic development and also economic resource is identified in the zoning ordinance and is acceptable for using as a finding for the public benefit. As I mentioned, and I have received some questions and comments, and I would like to start with the addition of the permeable pavers. We can certainly add more pavers in the area where it is feasible. We need to balance the protection and consideration of the long-term durability of paving in vehicular areas, including the trash enclosures. We also need to be cautious of adding pavers in locations such as near the city sewer easement because of maintenance conflicts. I will add that the design now has the rear 60% of the site water runoff directed to the proposed pervious paver areas and encourages the retention and infiltration as much as possible into the soils, therefore limiting the amount of stormwater to the front basin. The second was in reference to the landscape plan and the comment from another landscaper concerning the canopies and the tree height and whether the proposed plant materials will achieve the screening levels. It was suggested that a condition be added to have a third-party arborist or a landscape architect to ensure that the project meets the screening requirements. Let me respond by saying that the project landscape architect has 35 years of experience as a licensed landscape architect and over 25 years in the San Luis Obispo area. I brought copies of his resume tonight if you'd like to read more details. Second, the trees are selected from the city's master tree list and meet the WELO requirements or the drought-tolerant requirements. For additional reference, the footnotes in his letter says the recommendation is supported by solid data prepared by Cal Poly's Urban Forest Ecosystems Institute. Third, we feel this may become a situation of dueling landscape architects with differences of opinion, so introducing yet another party into the review process is not a reasonable solution or a request. There is a condition of approval that requires the screening achieve the standard as provided, and it will be the responsibility of the applicant to meet that. We do not believe that any further action is warranted with the inclusion of the project conditions, so we just ask you support the plan that we believe will work for this site. The third comment was in regards to the bioswale or detention basin and some stormwater questions and flood control. The city requires that the design of any proposed site handle the water generated by storms and not alter the peak rate, concentration, or location of historic flow patterns. The project was thoroughly reviewed and evaluated by the city engineering department, and in particular, a 60-page stormwater control plan and large peak flood analysis was done in 2018 that covered peak runoff flows from the 10, 25, 50, and 100-year rainfall events. We have provided some additional details on the bioretention basin in a letter from the engineer this afternoon, so we hope you had a chance to read it and you can find the explanation helpful in answering the stormwater questions. This letter will also address the question on the additional permeable pavers, which we do not think is necessary now because of what I've said a few minutes ago and what's in the engineer's letter. The last comment I would like to respond to is in regards to the view corridor and further reductions to the third floor. The applicant has modified his proposal and reduced the third floor by 780 square feet, as I mentioned earlier. This reduction and the change to the roof line has further reduced the view blockage of Morro Rock. This proposal was reviewed and evaluated under CEQA by a third party, and I just want to note that staff stole my thunder on this one because I was going to read the same language from the MND that she did, but I'll emphasize that it says that the duration of this blockage would be approximately 1 second. It further goes on to say that it is expected that this change would be unnoticed by the casual observer. As far as revising the floor plans and reducing the number of rooms, any further reduction to square footage on the third floor will not significantly change the view corridor, but at best you might get a sliver of a view. It will, however, significantly alter the project viability. For a project of this caliber and the added components, the minimum number of rooms normally would be around 89 to 90. It would make it financially feasible. The applicant believes in this project enough that he has been willing to change the architecture and the other project elements to what is presented tonight and absorb the cost just to keep the project alive. Any further alterations and add-ons will make it insurmountable and cost prohibitive to have him move forward. This project has undergone a robust review by a third-party consultant and city staff. The bottom line is that there are mitigations, and when implemented, the impacts are reduced to a level than less than significant per CEQA and also meets the city zoning requirements. In conclusion, we believe that the project modification and benefits offered have addressed all of the planning Commission's previous comments and concerns, and we certainly hope that the Commission is pleased with the work that we've done. With all due respect here, there have been some comments and questions that I've heard, for example, on engineering that will specifically be addressed in detailed calculations provided at the time of the building permit submittal, so I would ask that you would take that into consideration as well. The city will be reviewing and evaluating the construction drawings for code compliance. This is a very good project and will be a substantial benefit to the community in many ways, so on behalf of the Patels, I would respectfully ask for your support and recommendation for approval of the project as presented tonight. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. The architect is with me here tonight as well. There was a couple of questions that I heard when you were deliberating there, and as far as the flood and the windows are acceptable in the flood zone if they are used in conjunction with the floodgates. So it's either windows and floodgates or no floodgates and no windows. So hopefully that will clear that part up. And I believe I addressed Joe's comment about the economic benefit being acceptable under the zoning ordinance. So thank you for your time. The Patels are here with me, and I think they might like to come up and introduce themselves. So if it's okay with you, I'll have them come up real quick.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Amant Patel.
Sorry, he gets a little bit nervous.
That's fine. Please take your time.
This is Hemant Patel, and I'm his wife, Jalpa. We've been residents of Morro Bay since 1991. It's been quite a while. We're both fellow graduates of Morro Bay High. I went to school here locally, also graduated from Cal Poly. He's had over 25 years of industry business. We have two little girls that currently live here as well, going to Delmar Elementary, and we'll be Morro Bay grads here as well. So obviously we are looking at the long-term interest of not only our children, but the area as well. We absolutely love this area, and we love what we do. We've been fortunate enough to expand our footprint along the Central Coast as well. And our ultimate goal, obviously, is to have the support of our local friends, family, and community to hopefully have one here in town as well. So with that being said, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Further comment? Would anybody else like to speak to this item? And we'll leave the public comment open at the end for questions for the applicant. So please step forward and for the public. And if you could kind of have the next person be ready to come up, you'll have 3 minutes on this at this point.
Good evening, commissioners and staff. My name is Joe Wallach, a longtime resident of Morro Bay. And I'm in support of the project. The only exception is a big one, and that is the three-story, setting a negative precedent for other projects in Morro Bay. And then it's four stories and then five stories, and you got it. Pretty soon you get a Walmart comes in, and there goes your mom-and-pop businesses and the small-town feel. The uniqueness of Morro Bay has changed forever. So if there's another way, one of the things that I've been hearing here with all the problems of views and this and is simply keep it at two stories like we've had forever. I was held to 28 feet, and that's what my copy of the LCP says, 28 feet. So if it's 30 now, that's fine. But we can all – this project is brand new. So it can comply with the existing regulations. It can be a win-win situation. You can have it. Maybe compromise on a few of the parking spaces. Don't require so many or something. But as far as the height restriction, it's blocking views and setting an ugly precedent of three stories, and now everybody wants four, me included. So, you know, it's not a good thing for Morro Bay, not for that small-town thing that we all love and the culture and the values and trying to keep it nice and still allow for new things to come in. I understand that, and I'm in support of it. But there's got to be a better way of making it work. Maybe spreading out a little bit rather than going up, go out just a little bit so that he can have his 90 rooms and be viable. And it'll be a real asset for the community. We've already got two motels right across the street 50 feet away. And this is primarily a benefit for tourism. It's not going to benefit the local public residents that live here, not nearly as much as it will be. But it is an asset, and I am supportive of it if we can make it work without the three-story, without changing the rules, the regulations, and our local LCP. I want to see the new standard, 35.4 feet. That's all I've got. Thanks, Commissioners.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Sean Green, Morro Bay. About 3 months ago, I lost a sale on my house. It's a 1929 Spanish colonial that I saved and I restored, in part because the person at the planning counter told my buyer that a 10-inch driveway width variance was impossible. And then that was further supported by planning management. Now, the decisions that are made by people in this room impact people's lives. And case in point, the day after today's agenda was published, a vacant parcel across 101 in direct line of sight to Morro Rock went up for sale. I'm open to reasonable variances, which mine would have been. I'm even open to unreasonable variances, as long as this one is at this point, as long as the public benefits can offset that significant variance. Okay, they're asking our laws to be set aside, or one of our most important ones, as the community has voiced over time. So at this point, I wouldn't consider the project ready by any means, though I support the idea in principle and the applicants as well. The vast majority of the public benefits being proposed solely exist on the parcel and not off-site, and I think that's the big mistake here in terms of public benefit. If you feel otherwise and decide to push this thing through, just keep today's meeting in mind when all future variances are proposed that are potentially more reasonable than this one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Betty Winholtz, I appreciate both the previous speakers that we would like to see a good project, but this one goes almost beyond because of the height, because of the visual resource, because of the parking. The aesthetics go with the visual resource. So with the 3-point or with the 30, with the over height limit, add to that the HVAC or other things that will be on the roof. So I haven't heard how high that part will actually be. I haven't heard what the dimensions of that are, how long and wide they are, and how tall. So I'd like to know what that is on top of the 35.4 feet. You talked about the reduced height at the south end, but it sounds like if it's only 700 square feet, it may be, what, 10 by 7? How does that work? How much have you, is it just over the porte-cochere, or is it that slanted part? Have you saved for the visual resource? And I'd like to remind you that a visual resource isn't just about the car driving by at 65 miles an hour. It's the bikers that drive by and aren't going that fast. It's the pedestrians on Main Street that will also be perceiving this. So it's just not about the cars. It's about the other people that will also perceive this huge wall on the other side of the highway, of the off-ramp. I totally agree that most of the benefits, except for the one related to the school with the bike lane, it are all on-site benefits, you know, doing green things, doing good landscaping. That's not a benefit to the community. And TOT tax, frankly, is not a benefit. And just because it's not prohibited in the zoning ordinance doesn't also mean that it's allowed. That's an automatic, that's just an automatic. That's not above and beyond benefit for this really tall height. And the only thing I can see is the bike in front on the south side, and I'm not clear what, if anything, they're doing on the west side. And from the picture that I saw of the landscaping, I saw that the circles for the trees on the north side of the cypress are retained, but I didn't see circles on the east, on the west side retained. So if you could clarify that. And will they be cut or thinned, or are these new trees being added? I heard that it's going to take 10 years to get the coverage of the new trees. Thank you for articulating Caltrans and APCD's concerns. I think that I've said most of the things, and I would be in agreement that you take off the third story. You've protected everything in the general plan, the height, the visual, the aesthetic, and the parking. And I do have a concern that the parking is considered somewhat of a public benefit, the EV part, because I don't even know how much the one that's used in town, the two spaces at the chamber, do we have any kind of record of how much is being used along the highway? Does Caltrans know what the demand is? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
My name is Homer Alexander. I'm a member of the Citizens Finance Committee, but I'm speaking for myself this evening. I want to elaborate on a sentence on page 28 of the staff report. Furthermore, the applicant states that the city should give economic consideration of significant TOT revenue as a benefit to the city. The additional transient occupancy tax that this new motel will generate will be a very significant benefit to every Morro Bay resident and far outweigh any of the other public benefits mentioned. Based on the most recent 10-year financial forecast, next year the city's general fund budget will be out of balance by $460,000. This structural out of balance situation is projected to continue well into the future. This new motel will go a long ways in closing that gap. Knowing that firefighter paramedics or police officers will arrive at your house in less than 5 minutes are services that no one in this room wants to give up. These and other city services that we depend on are expensive, and they have to be paid for. Because residents only have so much capacity to pay taxes and fees, the city's going to have to grow its commercial base if it's going to maintain the level of services that we've all come to expect. As you're all aware, over the last 10 years, commercial development in Morro Bay, especially lodging, has been anemic when compared to the other cities in the county. There are a number of reasons for the lack of investment in our city, but the perception that Morro Bay is a tough place to do business surely has not been helpful. Your unanimous vote tonight to approve this project without a lot of additional conditions will go a long ways in letting other potential investors know that our city leaders are receptive to new commercial development. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Derek Kirk. I'm the Director of Community Engagement and Advocacy for Visit SloCal. Visit SloCal is the countywide destination marketing and management organization for San Luis Obispo County. As the countywide DMMO, as we call it, we are in tune with not just the visitor sentiment of those traveling to SloCal, but also with economic and visitation data, both of which support the need for projects like the one before you this evening. As such, I'm here to express Visit SloCal's encouragement of your yes vote on this item. Projects like this one along the SloCal coastline provide a number of benefits to the local community, including increased tax dollars, job opportunities for local residents, and the ability to expand the story that we tell around the state, country, and world each day to people who are considering visiting Morro Bay. A key strategic imperative of our organization is to advocate for the development of tourism infrastructure. This project is an excellent example of that effort and presents an opportunity for Morro Bay to further expand their visitor-serving accommodations, and even more importantly, provide an ongoing benefit to residents each year, as we heard from the previous speaker. Lastly, I would add that the Patels are extreme advocates for the travel and tourism industry on one side, but also for the city and the community of Morro Bay in everything that we see them do, not just here, but across the county and the state. So again, on behalf of Visit SoCal, we encourage your yes vote this evening.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Good evening, commissioners and city staff. I'm Jennifer Little, the City of Morro Bay's tourism manager, resident of North Morro Bay, and my husband and I own a retail store on the Embarcadero as well. Morro Bay has not had a new lodging property built in at least a decade. Adding new stock will help revitalize the entire hotel industry in our small town, and it's something that Morro Bay has needed for a long time. Based on Morro Bay's 2019-2020 occupancy and ADR, this project will provide approximately $250,000 in transient occupancy tax and will help meet the City Council's number one goal of economic sustainability. The locals will see TOT benefit in fire, police, and city services, as you heard from the previous person speaking. The 83-room project will allow for group stays, which we rarely see right now. Most tour groups leave from San Francisco Airport or LAX heading up or down Highway 1, usually have a day stop at Morro Bay before continuing to Pismo or Ventura for their overnight stay. In fact, Visit SoCal research shows that the Rock Embarcadero is the top point of interest for visitors in our county. Having this property off of Highway 1 will allow us to convert those day stops into overnight stays. Other destinations are able to offset their low season by capturing tour operators. With our limited hotel stock, we usually miss those opportunities. Tour operators book 12 to 24 months out in advance, which allows us to pre-book and pre-plan income ahead. Morro Bay Tourism attends various trade shows such as the American Bus Association and IPW to help book those tour groups. I can tell you personally, it's really an uphill battle to get people to look at us as a viable destination based on our current lodging that we have. Having a hotel off of Highway 1 would help that option. The meeting space proposed is a nice welcome addition to the product mix in Morro Bay. Currently, we only have one property with meeting space, which limits our overnight opportunities. Meeting space will allow for another growth avenue in our revenue stream as well. I appreciate your consideration of the project located at 295 Atascadero Road. I'm in full support of this project, and it's imperative that a new lodging product is created in Morro Bay to continue our growth. I am fully behind the Patels. They've been such a great community support for Morro Bay. They have several other properties here, and they really run them as quality products. So I would please look at them positively as a good opportunity for us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Good evening, Chair and Planning Commission Commissioners. I'm Tina Metzger. First off the bat, I'd like to thank Kathy Novak for her time that she spent answering my questions on a Saturday afternoon, and your planner here, Cindy Jacinth, who was very helpful to me also. They're both good examples of planners. My concern, and I'm glad the architect is here tonight, and maybe my questions can be answered on the solar panels that are going to be entirely covering the roof of this, except for the center part where the heating unit will be. That's a lot of solar panels, and typically solar panels are tilted up to a little bit or a lot to capture the southern exposure, and that is a huge area of a mirror effect that will affect people in the harbor track, residents in the harbor track, and the Hill Street, Sunset Circle homes, those residents, and that can be an all-day thing for people looking at that view shed. an incredible, iconic view shed toward the rock and the coast and the surf, the shoreline, and also looking north toward Cayucas and beyond. I went up to Fairview Street today to see if that area of town will be affected by this project, and it also will be in that view shed from many of the homes up in that area. I also am thinking of the traffic, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but the traffic on Highway 1 traveling north will be elevated above the Main Street level for much of that coming around, going north and going toward the project. And I'm wondering if there is a visibility problem with the reflection off the solar panels. So if my questions could be answered, I also, just as a general policy in that the Coastal Act asks for projects to be visually compatible with the character of the surrounding areas. And we have mainly one-story and two-story projects in that area, the high school and the motels. So those are my concerns, and I hope that they can be answered tonight. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Hi, good evening. My name is Mimi Goldberg, Planning Commission. And I really would like to recommend, please don't build anything that large, you know, right by our high school, right by, what I would like to see personally is we come down Highway 1 and we see how big Sur is. It's so beautiful, you know. Everything that's big is way off the road or whatever. But everything you see off the highway is so pretty, like one-story cabins. If there's a way you could possibly build around the plants, I mean, that just is so big for that, for all those children and all of us around here. I would totally rather see something for people that are older, elderly, that can't afford, you know, that live in trailer parks, or homeless people, or low income, or mentally disabled, or, you know, something that would be positive and pretty and not take away from our town. I hate to see this town turn into like La Jolla, I don't know, whatever, anything. But not, I like to keep it the way it is, but still I want to improve it. And I'm curious if you guys are thinking about the water reclamation, when that leaves, maybe attaching it then and having a bridge go over, you know. It just, it just sounds like a lot. And they're right. So that one gentleman was right. The 50 feet away are the two motels. Don't forget about the homeless in the creek. What are you going to do, build a fence around it and have security guards and make it look like a big jail? I mean, it just doesn't fit in. I'd rather see something more natural, more natural. There is ways to do it very nice. What do other cities do that's natural and makes it look very nice? It just would stick out like a sore thumb, I think. And I really would like to see you guys focus also, you know, it's on our people that really can't afford housing.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Next, please. Do we have anybody else who wish to speak on this? Okay. Do we have questions for the applicant? Would the applicant please like to step forward? Okay. Thank you. Michael?
Kathy, what's
I'll have Tom come up, too, if I need to back up. I'll try to answer most I can, though. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead and bring a tag team up.
Can you explain the bike sharing idea?
We don't have a bike sharing program associated with this project, so Tom and I were talking about it, so no.
All right. Okay. Can you explain the protocols for the charging stations?
You mean as far as the public use?
Yeah.
So, yes, we will allow the public to use the EV charging stations. The level 2 chargers will be free to use, but the level 3 chargers will be a pay-for-use.
Do the rooms guarantee a parking space? Are they assigned when one comes in? So.
No, and I don't believe we've gotten to that level of operational detail, but if you have something specific that you would like us to see, we're more than willing to take comments so that we can look in operational.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll save some of my things for comments, but, you know, we only have 2 in Morro Bay right now, and it's Quest that has to open some.
Sure. So this is no different than any other installation of EV chargers that you would see in front of Home Depot or in front of other stores that you see around town. There's some in front of, you know, in San Luis Obispo, they have in front of Target. They have them at Madonna Inn. Those are Tesla-specific ones. But they have the EV chargers out there. They, when people have an electric vehicle, they know where the electric vehicle charging stations are. There's apps that tell them where they're at and so forth, so they'd be made aware of where they are. This is just like any other hotel. Hotels don't do assigned parking. That would be more for, like, multifamily dwelling units or someone that uses that space permanently. At the number of parking spaces to guest rooms, we have excessive parking on this site. Normally, for a hotel, we would have 1-to-1 would be the most parking we would have, and this one we're in excess of that. And the electrical vehicle charging stations would be signed EV charging station, and I think it's common courtesy that people only use it to, you know, like just like the EV clean vehicle things that you see all the time. Those are signed as such, and they're written on the ground as you go in there. And I think it's just guilt that keeps people from parking there, because there's no one that's going to come tow you if you park your regular Camry in one of those. But for the most part, people don't park them there. And then the same thing with the electrical vehicle charging. People, it's common courtesy to do it while you charge and then go to it, find another parking spot or leave. There's no enforcement. There's no people going around ticketing them, but that's the way it works.
I appreciate you were talking to the high school. I think, you know, one of the things for me that's really significant is the existence of the tree screen to the west and to the north. You didn't mention any discussion with the high school about maintaining the quality of the trees. There's no long-term relationship there about making sure those trees are part of this.
You know,
aesthetic.
I think staff would be better to answer that question, because when the high school did the pool project, and then Cindy and I talked about this today, that there was some conditions in that project about maintaining those trees. And since they're not on our site, they're on the school district site, it really has got to do with that. So maybe Cindy can help out with the project conditions.
Sure. So when the high school pool project came forward, they had a condition that they had to submit a tree replacement or tree. They refer to it as a tree management plan. The condition doesn't actually have that word. But it would be a replanting plan, and that they would provide that to the city. That would denote all of the locations of the proposed tree replacements, and that they give preference to filling in the gaps along Highway 1 and to maintain that screening. So that was on the pool project. But about 10 years ago, they did the solar carport project, and then years before that, they did the softball fields. And every, you know, these are all conditions that exist on every single permit they've got. The solar carport was appealed to Coastal. Coastal had conditions on maintaining that cypress. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's on the high school's requirements.
I guess one of the things I detected a slight, I shouldn't comment. You were concerned about how much permeable parking would be required, but one of the notes says that the permeable parking would be considered along that west lane where the parking is underneath the existing canopy of the cypress trees.
Yes, and if you don't mind, I've got maybe I can get some help from AGP video. What I did is I took one of the plan sheets and I highlighted in yellow the permeable pavers, so maybe I can get him to put that up so we can show you see it.
Excuse me, while he's putting that up, are you proposing to over-X those permeable pavers to 30 inches?
The engineering letter said that they were going to have the rock in underneath the permeable pavers. That's part of the engineering letter that you received this afternoon. Now, hopefully you had a chance to read it, and he provides it. Yes. On the high school side, the yellow is the permeable pavers that we're proposing now, and then we have just those few parking spaces that are not proposed as permeable pavers, and then we have in the top corner there we have the trash enclosures. Typically, they don't like to use permeable pavers in the trash enclosure areas because of the weight and the trash trucks and durability for that particular area. So I just wanted to point out we do have quite a few there already, and then the yellow on the bottom is also highlighted because those are permeable pavers down there. And as I mentioned, that the engineer said that 60% of the rear part of the site, the water runoff will get drained and directed to those permeable paver areas. So I didn't see the necessity for adding additional permeable pavers because we're already influencing and infiltrating the water into those areas and along that tree canopy area, too.
One of the things that you're talking about is this bike lane. Right now, the bike lane is the existing one along the fence from the high school.
I don't think I quite understand your question.
Where's the bike lane coming from that you're putting the dedication?
It goes across the front property. Oh, so let me hold on.
There you go.
Okay, so on this one, we're flipped now. So the high school is actually to the bottom. So that little section of the property that pops down toward the high school.
Mm-hmm.
Right in there.
So it's that particular section right in there now that's actually part of this property, and the bike lane for the high school goes across that section of the property. So that's the section that we would be dedicating to the high school, so then it would become high school property and the bike lane.
So one of the things that has been mentioned is this idea of networking some of the improvements with some of the off-site pieces. That bike lane potentially loops around from the harbor as you go across the creek, and then you also have the loop on the other side with the other hotels where it goes along Route 1. I was just wondering, was there any discussion about trying to enhance the visibility of where the bike lanes are in addition to granting access or dedicating this to the bike lane?
I think the city's got a bikeway program that identifies the trail, and eventually it'll connect up to Cayucas, too, so it becomes part of this trail. And along the frontage there, it will be improved, as Cindy said, with this pedestrian and bike pathway, so it will be clearly delineated and a huge improvement to this frontage section to connect when the kids come from the south end across Highway 41, because I believe that striping across there is green there now, indicating the bike lane going across. And then as it comes across the front of this property, it will connect and make for a nicer path.
And right now on that site plan, the fence around the perimeter of the property does do that little Z down in the bottom right-hand corner. It comes down, and you're surrounding the bike storage, the bike parking, with the fence at this point.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's hard to see, but
the bike path in question is down
Right. But
excuse me, can you please speak into the microphone?
So what Tom is saying is that the pike, the existing property comes down, and the bike path of the high school is right there below the green that you see. Mm-hmm. When the new one is done, it will connect from Atascadero Road and come down there and connect to the bike lane at the high school.
And they won't have to go through a fence to get along the bike path. The bike path is outside of the fence.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm not sure if that was what the question was. But
please speak into the microphone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
The bike path is outside of the fence.
Right.
Okay. There's no going on to, you know, through a fence or anything along the bike path.
Was there a particular concern about fencing that bike rack off from the bike path?
Well, the bike rack is for this particular hotel project. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason why it's on the inside of the fence line, because it is part of this project and the property. So
The
it would be just like a parking space. Yeah.
The way that you're doing the grade's being raised to elevate the footprint of the building a certain amount.
Not along the property line, but for the building, yes, because since we're in the flood zone, and as Cindy mentioned earlier, we have to be 2 feet above base flood elevation. So with that requirement, without having a project with floodgates, we would have to put somewhere around 4 or 5 feet of fill on the site and then put the building on top of the fill to be able to meet those requirements. So when we discovered that there was going to be that much fill needed to added to the site to be able to meet that, we had a discussion with Rob Leivick and planning staff, and we all looked at it. And Rob Leivick said, yes, you know, that as a city engineer, he would allow us to reduce the amount of fill on site, bringing the overall building height down by installing the floodgate so that we can meet the flood zone requirements.
So the 35 feet is from the existing original grade, or is it from the raised grade?
It's from the average natural grade as it exists today. So it's actually taken from several feet below the building is where the measurement's taken from.
So the building itself is not 35 feet. It's 35 feet above the average.
That's correct.
Point.
The building is shorter than 35 feet.
And can you address the height of the mechanical equipment on the roof beyond the parapet height?
Sure. The good thing about this hotel is that there's very little mechanical roof equipment on the roof, because all of the guest rooms are conditioned independently, you know, without the equipment on the roof. The equipment on the roof is to handle the common areas and the corridors, just to ventilate some fresh air through there. It's probably in the range of 4 feet tall above the roof, and the parapet's about 2 feet of that, so it's probably 2 feet above the parapet. Mm-hmm. But it's pulled back into the center of the building, and it's located specifically there so that it's out of the view corridor. Mm-hmm. You know, from the street, it's not visible. And I'll defer. There was a question about solar panels. I'm going to talk about that too, but I'll wait.
No, I was going to say, are the panels relatively flat, or do they have a cant to them?
The panels are almost flat. They're in the 10 degree range. Mm-hmm. And then there was a question about reflectivity of solar panels. If the solar panels do reflect a lot of light, they're not doing their job.
Right.
Solar panels are by design to absorb light. That's where they get the energy from. That's why they're black, so that they absorb light. They're less reflective than a standard window. The normal technique for a roof is you want to make a very light-colored roof that would reflect a lot of the heat away from the building. That's a green building strategy. Solar panels are the opposite of that. So by covering the roof with solar panels, it'll be significantly less reflective than if we did not have the solar panels on the roof.
That's all I have.
One question on following up on that. Will the tilt be to the south or to the west or to the east?
It's to the south.
Okay, so that's going to keep the reflection from reflecting back into the residences.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Okay. Joseph?
So, Kathy, can you, or either one of you, can you explain to me again what exactly is the 2 feet of superstructure that's peeking over the parapet? What exactly is that?
It's the heating units.
Heating units. And technologically, there is no way to submerge them below the parapet level?
No, not that I'm aware of. I mean, we can screen it, and we can put screening up there so it's a more uniform appearance.
No, I'm not interested in raising the parapet.
No, we're not talking about the parapet. I'm sorry to interrupt. It would be screening only around the equipment. So the equipment's in the center of the roof, and the reason we located in the center of the roof, it's much less visible there than it is if it was at the perimeter.
I understand that. But my question is there some technological way to submerge that superstructure, even to the extent that it might require cannibalizing one room? I really don't know what I'm talking about specifically in terms of the technology, but would you understand the question I'm asking?
I do. And I think, Tom would have to have the technical part, but if you start submerging and you start losing rooms, it might take up more than one room. So the concern that we have is what I mentioned in my presentation is that the normal would be 89 to 90 rooms for this particular site to make this feasible. So when we start incrementally putting on additional components and things like that, we're fast approaching pushing this financially out of feasibility. So I just would like to ask that the commission would support with the design that we have and recognize that there's a lot of commercial development that does have the heating systems on the roofs, and we could add screening for the equipment itself in around that just that small area if that would make you feel better and not to look at the equipment.
I fully appreciate that, but I'm also mindful of typically in other projects that have come before the Planning Commission, we have that 5-foot discretion to extend the height limitation in the interest of creating a more attractively designed roof. Now, admittedly, the parapet solves that function because it conceals a lot of ugly superstructure. But the height of the building plus the parapet plus the raised elevation is at 35 feet plus. So essentially, we have consume that extra 5 feet that we typically have in our discretion. So for me, it would be much easier to accept this if I could just say straight out, this building is 35 feet, a few inches, but essentially that's the maximum height. And while I appreciate that we have to achieve that number of rooms to make it financially feasible, I am wondering if there isn't room to make a slight compromise in such a fashion as that we could say the height of the building is 35 feet plus. Now, just consider that. The other question I have is with respect to the facade, and I find the vertical siding really an attractive addition from the previous design, but I'm noticing on the last quadrant at the far north end of the building, the siding seems to be absent, and it seems that a pattern was established, but it's not there. Is there a reason for that?
I'll let Tom speak to that.
Can I see that? Are we talking about the west elevation?
I think it's true of both the east and the west elevation, unless I'm
I think he's talking about the pattern set up such that the whole north end is plaster wrapped around from north, south, east, west.
Yeah, I don't see any vertical copper-colored siding at the very end of the building.
I see. Well, it was because wherever we have the hipped or the shed roof, we brought the stucco up to the shed roof, and at those locations, that's where it wrapped around, so it would have made a material transition at the exterior corner, which we always try to avoid if we can, but it's not a problem if we wanted to relook at that. We're happy to look at where the material placements are. But the idea was that at the top of the wall, for the most part, you either are with the muted colors of the rusted, the kind of rusty colored metal, or the roof and the metal roofing on top of that. So those were kind of the alternating pattern as it went down, so that we kind of softened the top of the building with either of those two.
Well, I'm just looking at it. I see the siding at the front of the building with the shed roof, and I just wondered why I didn't see the siding at the back of the building with the shed roof.
There's no specific reason. So
that was my question.
Jesse?
Yeah, I have a few here. I don't mean this to sound as if
you were being disingenuous, but the numerous green building requirements you guys alluded to in the public benefit part of the presentation, or your comments, I should say, would you say that they are above and beyond what is required by Green Code, or would they be meeting the Green Code?
No, I think that we are going above and beyond in a number of factors. The primary one where we are going above and beyond is the net zero energy consumption and trying to create as much of the energy production on site as we can. Certainly the Green Building Code requires things like the energy efficient windows, the energy efficient lighting. So those are for the green building standards, but they don't require the production of the photovoltaics and the capacity that we're trying to do and offset as much of that usage as we are on site. We're going significantly above in that regard.
Okay. On that note, kind of going to dance around here a little bit. So I'm a little concerned about the flood. So I heard that. So do you know what zone this is? Is it A, AOX?
I think it's A, isn't it? You know, well, I don't have anything, I think, right off the top, but I think if I remember mine, it might be an A.
Okay. And the only reason I ask is because, I mean, I know we're dealing with a couple different sources of water here. We're dealing with the runoff, the storm water. We're also dealing with the tsunami loads. So we're dealing with a couple different things here. And I'm assuming the floodproofing we're talking about is a response to the 100-year flood A zone. Would that be correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so in my experience with FEMA, they require so if you're going to be if you're going to build a foot below BFE and you're going to waterproof up to or floodproof up to 3 feet above, that would mean you couldn't have electrical outlets, meaning receptacles, lights, and things like that in that 4 foot. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, that's a distinction between wet floodproofing and dry floodproofing. If we were proposing to wet floodproof like you do for a parking garage, an example, and I hate going back to San Luis every time, but that's where we are. We're just finishing up the Hotel Cerro downtown, which is right on Marsh Street, and that garage is wet floodproofed, which means that it allows the water to flow in, and everything below the demarcation line, whether it's 2 feet or 1 foot above the BFE, has to be flood-resistant material. It has to have the equipment that's essential for the building elevated above that, not necessarily outlets, but switchgear, meters, all that type of stuff has to be located above it. What we're proposing for this is a dry floodproofing, which is similar to the lobby and everything else that's on the ground floor, the restaurant, and all the other buildings that are typically seen along Marsh Street or in the downtown core. And that's dry floodproofing. Those same requirements don't apply because you're essentially creating a waterproof floodgate at the perimeter. So the utilities don't fall into that same category.
I see. How would you think the EV chargers would work in that situation? Would they be required to be the 4 feet above?
Well, an EV charger just by essential is going to be located up at a pedestal at a handicap accessible height, so the charger itself would be located up higher than that, whether or not it's a requirement of the floodproofing.
It'd be above 48 inches?
No, it was 3 feet. It was 1 foot. I think we were only floodproofing to 3 feet.
Correct.
Okay. And so that's finished floor. That's above finished floor, right? So presumably the parking spaces would be below finished floor, hopefully, right?
Well, there's also a distinction between the equipment that's essential to operate the building. And so, like, the cars that are parked, if there's a car parked in the parking lot, it's going to get flooded. If there's a transformer out there, the transformer is going to get flooded. I mean, you don't elevate the transformer up above that height. That's just the nature of the beast. I can't speak to exactly the elevation of the EV charger relative to the finished floor, relative to the base flood elevation, but I will tell you that in regards to how this is treated, we will follow FEMA standards, we'll follow the floodproofing standards and the City of Morro Bay's requirements for that so that it'll be fully able to be flood insured, which is really what's the driving force behind it.
Right, so you don't see there being a fatal flaw in there. The last, I guess I'll just kind of cut to the chase here. I'd rather not go down this whole path and then find out, oh, by the way, we found out those 9 EV chargers we promised you are not feasible because of the flood.
No, the EV chargers are going in.
Okay. Did have a couple more questions. Kind of piggybacking off of what Joe was talking about. So I think what he was trying to say, is there a way, like, for example, with a dual pack in these individual conditioned areas, that we could eliminate all HVAC on the roof? I think that was the question you were trying to ask.
If that's what, if that's what's peeking up above the parapet, yes, exactly.
I suppose it's possible, because it would not be possible if we had a restaurant with a hood on the top. We don't have a restaurant with a hood on the roof. If there's equipment that we can find another location for, whether it be on a lower parapet, you know, like maybe above the carport, you know, the porte-cochere, that we build a parapet onto that or something, conceal it in that location, or we find a location on the ground. I know the site's very tight with the number of parking spaces in the landscape area. We can certainly explore that if that were something that was that the Planning Commission wanted us to explore and see what we could do from a feasibility standpoint. We'd be happy to do that, but I don't think I'm comfortable saying that absolutely we can have no equipment on the roof right now without having looked into
okay,
it.
Okay, that's fair. And correct me if I'm wrong, so let me ask this form of a question, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be safe to say that we're approving this at 35.5 foot?
Mm-hmm.
35 and a half, give or take. But we can realistically expect an 18-inch deviation for that in the form of solars. I mean, solars allowed to go 18 inches above whatever we approve regardless. Would you say that's correct?
We have a parapet around the – and we're measured to the parapet. The roof is actually below that, and the roof's going on there. So.
Oh, so 35.5 is to the parapet?
To the parapet.
Oh, okay.
So the solar very well may not need to be 18 inches above the. It depends on where it is. You know, because the roof sloped to get drain, and it depends on where the solar is installed. So when we get down to inches, it's difficult to discern that at this point. But it's low-profile solar. It's kept down to the as close as we can to the roof itself. And our intent is to try and maximize the amount of solar on the roof in order to
I know this is a difficult question to answer at this point in the design, but I mean, I know since height has kind of been the most talked about in the community. So, I mean, if we approved it at 35 and a half and we ended up at 37 with the solar, you know, when you talk standoffs and 10 degree cant and all these things, I mean, that adds up quick. So, well, never mind. I'll say that for comments.
Okay, Joseph. I guess I should then ask the question again, because my understanding was the only superstructure that would be peeking over the top of the parapet would have been those ventilation stacks and not the solar panels. Now, am I hearing that it is a possibility that the solar panels would also stretch above the parapet?
I don't believe so, no. The way that we've set up the roof drainage is to drain towards the center of the roof, so the highest portion of the roof is going to be closest to the parapet. And the reason we do that, a number of things, it allows us to control the drainage and treat it. But it also puts the HVAC equipment, which is in the center of the roof, at the lowest portion of the roof, so it keeps its profile as low as possible. And the solar panels, I don't expect them to stick up more than 18 inches, and we have a 2-foot parapet. So the solar panels should not be higher than the parapet.
I'm going to interject here on that. So what is your highest point of the roof as opposed to the top of the parapet?
The highest point on the top of the roof is the parapet. The only thing projecting above that is the equipment.
No, I mean,
which
you've got your parapet coming in, and then your roof tying into the side of the parapet. What is your height differential between the top of the parapet and the top of the roof?
2 feet.
2 feet. Okay. So we could essentially take a foot and a half off of that parapet height and lower this building a foot and a half, and you'd have 6 inches of freeboard still there at the highest point between the roof and the parapet?
In theory, but the intent is to conceal as much as we can on the roof,
right,
and provide some flexibility in the height there, because the roof isn't the same height all the way across. It goes up and down. But I can't I don't have my glasses. Maybe if I put my glasses on, I can read it.
So that's 30 feet 3 inches, and that's 32.8. This is 30.
Okay, so it's 30 feet 3 inches to the roof at the low point. I mean, I'm going to have to do math. But right. It's at the drain, it's 30 feet 3 inches, and the parapet's at 32 feet 8 inches. I don't know how wide the building is. Let's say it's 30 feet at a quarter inch per foot. It's that kind of thing. We're in the ballpark of 2 feet.
Okay.
It might be 1'9", it might be 2'1". It's somewhere in that range.
Okay. But there is freeboard between the high edge of the roof and the inside of the parapet.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry to interject, but Susan, were you done, Jesse?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Susan, do you have questions? Michael, do you have any other questions? Okay, I just have a couple. Typically on the EV charging systems, you'll have an attendant that will shuffle cars and while they're being charged at night or something. Is there going to be somebody available there to when a car finishes charging, almost like a valet system, to be able to move that car out so another car could charge there, so you could have multiple uses on the level 2 and the level 3 chargers?
Well, the advantage is that this is a hotel, so there will be someone on site 24 hours a day as far as management goes. I don't know if that's one of their tasks or whether that's a request, like a wake-up call. Like, hey, right. Can you move my car, move this guy's car in, and I'm willing to leave you a key to do it. I mean, it seems like a reasonable thing that someone might be able to do, and nice amenity for the guests so that they wake up with a fully charged car. But I have not run that past the Patels.
Okay, that's typically how it's handled in the instances I've used it. And
mm-hmm.
especially having... No. I don't stay in fancy.
Okay.
And so also typically on level 3 chargers, you'll have... they'll be charged for a time... in the parking space, but also for a time being charged. Do you know which system you're going to be used, is going to be used there? Because basically what I'm looking for is to be able to eliminate somebody parking there for 6 hours while they go do something. Typically they're charged, they're charged through the system to try to avoid that and to penalize people that do that.
So it's an incentive to move your car.
Yes.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And those level 3s, I understand, take about 20 minutes normally to charge a car. So it's something that we would expect people, especially then they're maybe in a rush to get out of town and they don't have quite enough juice to get home, swing by, take 20 minutes, charge up their car and go. So I think that there will be a natural turnover for that.
And it makes sense that if they're getting charged for leaving their car parked, they're not going to leave their car parked very long.
Yeah,
there's different companies. EVgo and ChargePoint have different rates, but are you going to be using one of those systems, or are you going to be doing this in-house?
No, it would be a system. I just don't know which one.
Okay, I'm not trying to pin you down on either one. Just all of those have, typically use that kind of a system to maximize the use and maximize the return on these, because these are profit-generating centers. So, the biggest problem, we're having, and the biggest feedback we're having is with the height of the building and also the screening of the building. So my question to you is a couple questions. We're utilizing the cypress trees in the back on the west side and the north side is effective screening as justification to allow a higher height than what would normally be allowed in this zone. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, the screening, it really is the view from Highway 1 looking toward the building, so the trees are on the backside of that. So we're not using the trees, cypress trees at the high school from screening, because you're not standing at the high school looking toward the hotel and looking toward Highway 1.
But we're using them to help minimize the height effect of the building, correct?
Maybe Cindy can help me out on this one, but I don't believe that SWCA was making, when they were writing the visual section, was making a big stand with the cypress trees as being part of the screening for the hotel, because it was more about the view from Highway 1 looking toward the hotel and the landscaping that we were installing to soften the building from the view from Highway 1.
One of the paragraphs in there stated that because the cypress trees were there, we were not blocking views from the view shed because the cypress trees blocked had already previously blocked that view.
Yeah, okay, now that you've said that, that does make a little bit more sense. So, you know, that's kind of a difficult question because the trees are there existing now. We don't know how long that those trees are going to survive and stay that height. So for the evaluation under CEQA, we're taking the existing conditions and evaluating this project based on these existing conditions. It's difficult for us to forecast what the future might bring and how we could evaluate this, especially under CEQA, with a future condition that we have no control over and we don't know the answer to.
That's my point exactly.
You know, if some of those trees come down, some of the views will open up because some of the views that the view blockage is being blocked by those trees being there.
Yeah. So my concern is, and this is maybe not a question, but in the form of a question, is my concern is that we need to maximize the mitigation of the effect of this building on the possibility that it's going to be a detrimental effect to those trees and that screening, the screening effect that those trees have. Because if, you know, partially because we're using this as a mitigation for the height of the building. So every, you know, I've got half a page of notes here that are concerns about how the building and the paving and the over-X on the pervious paving and the drip and the solid paving within the drip line of the build, of the root zone and stuff like and all of that are going to impact that line of trees, you know, there, you know, that so therefore we could maintain those trees as long as possible and maybe even interplant in between to create a next generation of cypress that can come up while those trees are at their maximum maturity now. So that was my suggestion for bringing in a third party arborist or a third party specialist in the marine environment and the California Native Tree Society or California Native Plant Society, so we could maximize that effect and keep that tree line there and even possibly use those cypress trees on the east side, the east line of the building, to continue that facade of trees and screening that we have there, to cut down the effect of the building, so we could mitigate the height of the building with that.
So I don't think we're really directly asking you to grant the exception for the height and using the high school trees as a mitigation measure. We've offered the benefits for this project specific to give you the findings to be able to make the exception for the height. It's difficult a little bit with, you know, trying to hire an arborist or looking at that. We would need to talk to the school district because it is their property and it is their trees, and if we're trying to make some determination on the health of those trees with this arborist, they might take offense to, you know, something like that. I'd like to go back to when I showed you where the pervious pavers were. We do have landscaping on that side around the root zone of those trees. We do have the permeable pavers, and the stormwater runoff is running toward those permeable paver areas. So some of the asphalt that you see that you're talking about is, you know, a little further away from the drip line of those trees. So I think we've actually tried to mitigate that and provided more water infiltration toward that root zone so that we can protect those trees. If we're talking about some sort of a mitigation measure that you need for those trees, if the trees go away, you know, maybe we could offer to buy a couple of trees for the cypress trees and give them to the high school for a replacement. I think that if we're going to go down something like that, I think we need to have some parameters around it. We can't just go crazy. But, no. Again, you know, the difficult part of that is involving the school district. So if the school district would accept, let's say, a couple of 24-inch box trees, cypress trees, if one of their trees decides that it's going to just up and die because it's just too old, right. You know, we can offer to give it to the high school, you know, if they would take it and plant it.
Okay.
I mean, that's another idea that I can come up with for you, is to offer to, you know, buy a couple to replace.
Okay. We also have the fingers there, where we're having screening on the east side, and also on the north side. We don't have pervious pavers there for that whole line of trees there. So we have solid paving along that north side where there's a row of cypress there that are cutting into the drip line of those trees.
We can certainly look at adding some pavers. I guess when I was giving my, I'll go back to my presentation, saying that the durability with vehicular traffic driving around, and then we've got a trash truck that's going to be driving through this particular area, accessing the trash enclosures and things like that. So we just have to be concerned with that traffic and the weight and the pavers in that particular area, whether it would become more of a maintenance problem trying to take care of it than just putting the asphalt back there. But recognize, you know, we're happy to take a look at that and see if it's a feasible thing to do. If you want to add it as a recommendation to consider if feasible to do that, we're certainly happy to have you add that.
Okay. And then also I'm a little concerned about a 30-inch over X getting into the root zones, especially because cypress tend to surface root, from my understanding. So they, you know, you're taking out a sizable portion of the transmission properties of the tree by over-exing 30 inches down. So these are the questions I have, and where I think having a third-party, non-partial arborist or specialist involved may help solve these problems or be able to recommend solutions while keeping the health of the trees as the foremost point.
Well, if you would like to put into your recommendation that we consider hiring an arborist or another expert for providing evaluations to the project team when preparing the construction documents to consider the root zones, you know, we're happy to talk to somebody and find out. Just recognize that we will have some limitations as far as how far can we go with evaluating these trees without running into issues with the high school. So, you know, give us some a little attitude on that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to work with you on that.
So we protect
the trees, you know, use the...
I totally understand.
You know, use the project. Okay, then another question I had, back to simple questions, on the lighting. My reading of it was that they were externally illuminated, you know, monument sign, and then there was the signage on the building was called halo lighting, and is that backlighting a solid, you know, an opaque lettering with backlighting behind it? Is that how you're calling that?
Yes.
Okay, great. In evaluating the traffic count, did they take into account the prime time when the school's being, people coming in at 8 o'clock and leaving at 3 o'clock, where typically when you in a hotel, most of the traffic for a hotel, most of the trips are around 8 o'clock when people are leaving to get on the road, and around 3 o'clock when they're coming in, when the rooms are ready, usually around 2 o'clock, you know, for after housekeeping. I noticed that the traffic trips seemed they didn't delineate on the traffic study for the time factor when those two times overlap. Did I read that wrong, or was that taken into account?
I believe it was. I didn't bring the traffic report appendices with me. I brought the actual report, but I know when I was looking through the appendices for the traffic report, they had traffic counts, and they were, I remember reading the traffic report and talking about peak times. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say yes, but because it seems like that would be been something that staff would have flagged as well when they were reviewing the traffic report to make sure that there was accurate counts and consideration for the times. So maybe staff has something to add to that.
Yeah. I did note in reviewing the traffic study that it included those AM and PM peak hours during that coincided with school traffic.
Okay.
And I saw the trip counts and the intersection diagrams where you could see when it swelled during school time.
Okay, yeah. So that was looked at then?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, the other thing about the parking lot shading, you know, it seems, you know, once again, this comes back to the trees. On the shading diagram, it looked like we had a majority of the shading diagram. The shading was supplied by the cypress tree. Both of those lines of trees in those areas. Was the shading count, the percentage, including the shading from the cypress trees, or was it just the shading from on-site vegetation?
The landscape architect prepared the shading plan and indicated the canopies that were being used to provide the shading. And the other thing that I'd like to mention is we did not provide any shading that the building is going to be providing into the parking lot. So what you're seeing on the shading plan really is the vegetation. It looks like he did use some, everything that was from shading that was used on the property, he indicated. So there would have been some from those cypress trees. But again, you know, we didn't incorporate the building shading of part of this parking lot, which would make a huge difference as well.
Okay. On the tree list or the tree selections that your architect chose, were those? Do you know if those were salt tolerant?
Yes.
Trees? Yes. Okay.
Yes.
And
they meet all the WELO calculations. We provided those calculations to staff when we submitted these plans, too.
Okay. Okay, does anybody else have any further questions? Okay, then I have another question on this. You know, I'm also concerned with the mass of the building on the south side, and I appreciate what you've done, you know, the changes you've made to the facades, and I think it works much, much better than the original submission. I'm still concerned about the mass of the south side. We are giving you a height, you're asking for a height exemption and a variance for that. And we're still, to me, the mass of that south side, we added a sloped roof, but that still didn't reduce the mass, particularly right at that south facade. So would it be a, project go no go line if you reduce the room count on that third floor by two rooms, so that you could reduce the mass on that south facing facade and be able to step the building up back into the site rather than have it all push forward?
Yes, it would. He's already at an 83 count when he's figuring out financials for a project like this, he'd be looking at 89 to 90 rooms, and now we're at 83. So if we back off down to 80 or 81, we'll keep bringing back the hotel count, so we keep pulling back his ability to be able to make this a financially feasible project. And the amount of money that he's spent so far to date and redesigns and this. We've got building permit fees that are going to go up substantially when he gets ready to do this over when his first calculations were done. So we do have quite a bit invested that would be harmful. Now, Tom is just pointing out to me here on this elevation that he could look at lowering that shed roof down a little bit. Of where it's at right now. I don't know, what are we talking about, 2 feet, maybe a foot?
You can move it a few feet down without impacting the room count, which is obviously critical.
Right.
We want to keep it above the porte cochere.
Microphone.
Yeah. That's, okay. And then in that
that lowered roof area, that shed roof area, would that be a place you could put the package units? I mean, for the ventilation units for the public space?
If we eliminated the shed roof and went with just a lowered parapet around it, that would create a well, and that would create an area where we could put some of that equipment, and that would be a good spot for it.
Okay.
But it would eliminate the shed roof because the shed roof, you can't put equipment on the shed roof itself. But we could, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Let me make sure I understand that last comment. So I thought you were saying on the south elevation, you could lower the shed roof and put a parapet on the portico. Portico share.
Well, I got a really nice sketch of it right here, but
well, I can.
But no one can see. Well, no, let's just see it.
Can we get an elevation? That elevation up?
And actually, it's not a nice sketch. Now that you're going to see it, but it's upside down.
Spot.
Okay.
So initially, what I was saying is that you could bring that roof down and keep it a shed roof, but bring it down some.
Okay.
But then, when you were mentioning the equipment going there, what I was saying is that what we could do is do a parapet across the front there to create a well. I was almost drawing a section there.
At about that height?
Yeah. There. And then put the equipment right in that location there, which would get it off of the roof and bring it down to that elevation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It would change the view from the street because you would no longer see a shed roof.
Right.
You would see a flat parapet, but you would get the equipment off the roof.
And there's no way that the equipment could go on the portico share?
It can, but it would change it pretty drastically because right now the port corsair is a very thin line going across there. It would make it quite a bit beefier.
That would make it a lot more massive.
Mm.
Okay. Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not the one who was proposing shed roofs. I'm not a fan of shed roofs. So the parapet with the mechanical unit, I think, solves a lot more problems for the residential units that we'll be looking at the top. I'm not concerned about the photovoltaic situation, but we will see the tops of the mechanical units. Where Commissioner Lure and I are from, where we're from, we see everything on top of the high school. I mean, we see everything that's a problem. So it's I think that's an interesting way to solve that problem. It still keeps the massing, and I really appreciate that you took that corner out. That's the one aesthetic piece that I think was a really major significant change, was opening up that corner. You know, I think the whole south elevation is significantly better.
Yeah. Okay, another question on building height and, the application of the stacked stories. You've called out for an 8'6". Ceiling height in there, I'm assuming that's from finished floor to finished ceiling.
That's the plate height. The finished ceiling would be slightly less, but yes.
Yeah.
And then when you have the HVAC, it brings it down another foot.
Can that be reduced to an 8 foot, and then that would eliminate another foot and a half of total building height? I know the eight foot six are much more, extravagant, but we're also dealing with constraints here.
No, understood. And what we're also dealing with on our side is we're trying to, we feel like there's a lot more value to the hotel as a branded hotel.
Right.
And to do 8 foot ceilings in the rooms and 7 foot ceilings in the corridors and in the bathrooms and entryways is really it's not an ideal situation. It would be difficult to do that.
Okay. Okay, any further questions for the applicant? Jesse?
I don't know if this is the right time to ask it, but I have you, so yeah. I'll ask you. One of my thoughts on this was that we would be representing our community a little bit better if I asked for a couple more level threes in lieu of some of the level twos. So instead of a 7-2, maybe a 50-50 or a 55-45 or something.
I'm going to appreciate your comment. However, the cost difference between the level twos and level threes is significant.
But the level threes are cost recovery.
Not for the cost of construction. You're talking about, it could be six times as much for the cost of a unit for a level three. So we could be looking, some of the research that I did on the cost for those level three units were somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 a piece. So when we, the cost comes in because it's the transformer costs and the electrician costs and so insulation drives the price up. So when I'm asking the commission for consideration that when we start putting add-ons to this project and we start saying $25,000 here, $50,000 there, and we start adding this up and all the other work that we've done, we are really pricing this project out of feasibility. So I would just respectfully request that we keep the cost down so that we can continue forward with the project and accept the recommendation as we have it as presented.
With all due respect there, if we're talking about a difference from an 800-amp switch gear to 1,000, and we're talking about voltages and transformers that are already going to the other level threes, we're talking about the inclusion of some extra conduits and some extra conductors. I mean, really, we're not talking about a significant increase in price other than the actual unit themselves, which should be self-supporting. I guess I'm just not understanding.
The research that I've done does not show that it's that much cheaper to keep adding the extra units in. I mean, there's a significant cost for each one of those particular spaces, and the research bears out that they are just very expensive. And so adding one more level three on is not going to be just another $5,000 project cost that they can recoup, you know, relatively quickly. We're talking about somewhere between $25,000 and $50,000 by adding
in addition
one more.
To from a two to a three.
Yeah, but the level three units are costing somewhere around $25,000 to $50,000 for a level three charger. So if you turn this level two in to a level three. Level two charger might be a couple $1,000s, $3,000, and so the cost that you're adding on to this project by incrementally and thinking that if the level three charger is 4 to 6 times the cost of a level two charger, and we put that in the financial column and add up everything else that he's spending, it's these incremental costs that are hurting this project. So that's why I'm just requesting that if you...
Okay. Well, just for the record, I intend to propose that as far as an amendment. So.
Okay. That's fine. We'll accept, you know, the comment.
Okay. Any further questions for the... Yeah.
One of the hotel wise folks in our testimony said that this was a place that might be applicable to tour buses and things like that. What happens if you get some tours with tour buses? Where do the buses park?
Yeah. I think that's a perfect example, and we would encourage it where – oh, sorry, I'll speak into the microphone. If we can get 25 to 30 guest rooms to show up in one vehicle, there'll be plenty of parking for that vehicle to park where there would normally be 20 to 30 vehicles parked.
Can you actually demonstrate, though, that that can happen on the site because of the location of some of these trees that are in there? I mean, I guess on the west side, it seems like where you've got the parallel parking to the perimeter, that might be a place that you could get in. I'm just thinking in a way, it's like the electric chargers. I mean, I have an electric car now. It makes it makes choices for me instead of me making the choices. I have to go where it can get fed, you know. And so as people start looking at hospitality that caters to certain types of folks, if your audience has these vehicles, you're smart to put them in there because it's going to be an attractor for people to want to stay there because there's such a dearth of them around here. And the level three chargers over the holiday at Madonna Inn were overwhelmed. Those were lines for those because there's so many people traveling with that vehicle. So to me, it's more of a marketing point for you to consider that whoever your clientele is may be wanting to have those types in there. Now, when you can have a level two in charge overnight, you're pretty much done. But some of those ones that if they are for the public, and you do have a capacity to charge with one of these organizations, you may be able to turn them into a profit center, actually.
I think if there was a way that we could find some way to help with the funding of these level threes, I don't think there's an opposition on our part to not do the level threes. It's just more about the costs that are getting involved in the project. So I think, you know, in time, you know, we still need to go to the council for approvals, and we need to do our construction drawings. And so some pennies from heaven fell, or, you know, we found some opportunity to be able to do something. I'm certainly, you know, the cost comes down. We would certainly, you know, look at that, because I think you're absolutely right. And then I was looking at the plans, and there's seven parking spaces on the east side. So
you probably get a couple.
So, I think a bus could easily slide in there without and take up those parking spaces without interfering with what the landscaping is on the other side.
So, Kathy, let me just suggest on a there are some of these charging programs, charging companies that have a lease back agreements. So it's essentially a, you know, they'll essentially put them in and for mostly the cost of the people charging them, and then you don't make as much profit, but it's more of a profit sharing program for some of them. So, you know, if you can look into that, but I think what we're talking about also is maybe putting the infrastructure in so you have an oversized conduit there so you can pull a 200 amp cable through it, rather than putting it in for a 40 amp level 2 charger.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, when I've told people over the years that I've been doing this that, if you have the ground dug up, it's easier to run conduit to think about the future, and I don't think there's any disagreement on our part to do that. It's just the actual installation. So we'd be happy to take a look at any of these programs, and like I said, if, you know, pennies drop from heaven or we found a program that would be, you know, beneficial and we could switch, we will, you know, certainly look at that. We're just asking if you would be respectful of what we've got and accept our proposal that we've provided tonight as the bare minimum for the EV chargers.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, this one's more for Cindy or Scott. When we have a project like this that's adjacent to the interchange, or if the roundabout would ever come about, is there a request for participation from the surrounding businesses, or does that trigger some kind of assessment based on distance? Or?
Yes, they are required to pay.
That's one of our conditions of approval that you have in there. We have to pay for a mitigation
Correct.
Fee. And the city has a standard formula that they use based on trip generation from the traffic report and the estimated cost of the roundabout. So they work out the formula and tell us that he needs to pay a certain mitigation fee, and that's all in your projects.
Okay. Thanks. I think we're good with you. We'll close public comment. Thank you very much for your presentation and
thank you very much.
Questions. Yeah. And okay. We've got several issues that I see that we have to deal with on this. So I think we need to have our discussion on height and mass and mitigation of that. A quick discussion on traffic. It seemed like we have the answers on that. I've got a big section on landscaping and tree protection. If anybody has any questions on the signage, and then also the undergrounding of the utilities, and then the pros and cons of the public benefits and the weight we should give them towards granting a height exemption based on what. So who wants to take a look at? Who wants to start? Okay, Michael.
Yeah, for me this is a context project. It doesn't fly for me if it's two blocks down the street. In this location, it does. To me, as Chairman Luer was suggesting, the real mitigation is those cypress trees. If those cypress trees aren't there, I don't think they've mitigated. The cypress trees are there, so the building's not blocking access to the beach. The building's not blocking a view shed from the hills. The building's not blocking the view from the ocean up to the tops of the hills. So the height to me is acceptable because of the cypress trees. What concerns me is if the cypress trees don't have some kind of mitigation or loss prevention or performance aspect over time, we've lost what to me is the key piece. So it is important to me that we have some kind of, that's why I was asking about the discussions with the high school. And I know the high school's been in that zone where we've said, you have to do this. But I think it's one of those things, if you look at that part of Route 1, it is the way it is because of those cypress trees. And I think given that the bed of Route 1 is in the middle of the second floor, it doesn't have the appearance of this height from Route 1. It has the appearance of the length from Route 1. Now, I don't know if there's anything to mitigate that. Now, some of the people that were advocating a two-story building, well, then we'll lose our 100-foot, 90-foot setback from the edge of the property, which is not required. So if you lose the third floor, you're impacting the setback on the first floor. This block, to me, is one of the greatest things we have as an asset yet in the city to test. It was seen as wasteland. We had people advocating to rebuild the sewer on this stretch of property. And this is potentially a gold mine. What this sets up is an important set of criteria. I'm very concerned that if we say this is three stories, everybody thinks it can be three stories. This one can be three stories. I don't think the other ones can. But we are going to get into a problem of the floodplain just gets worse as you go downhill toward the beach slightly, that you're going to have, instead of a couple feet to mitigate for flood, you're going to have 6-8 feet, or like the former sewer plant was up there on a, I think, a 6 or 8 foot knoll to drive to. So, you know, to me, it's a site-specific thing. I'm very impressed with what they did to the south side. For me, the building in general isn't as industrial as I'd love it to be. I'm a fan of our industrial aesthetic here. The things on the roof don't bother me, except when I think of it next to a white stucco building down below. I'm not a fan of tack-ons like the little awnings on the side. There's not a lot of modulation on the facade, but there is some. If I look at the plan, there is modest movement on the facades. I'd rather see the materials changes align with the back and forth on the facade than a straight vertical or a straight horizontal line. I love the Core 10. I wish more of the building was Core 10. I think when you think of a darker building recedes into the background of the trees more than the whiter stucco pops out. I agree with the comment about the north side that Commissioner Ngroffi was talking about. That facade, I think, will pop out more to the north presentation, even though the trees are there. That set of trees is thinner than the ones on the west. So I think I'd like to see the Core 10 idea go around the north facade somehow. I'm fine with the idea of the parapet and the mechanical system getting off the top of the roof. You're really just pressurizing and air changes in the corridor. I don't know if that's a heated system or not for the corridors. I know, but it's a constant pressurized system, yeah, so that the smoke doesn't get in the corridors.
And also the first floor public spaces.
Yeah, but I think it might actually be more economical to put it there. I'm not sure. Some of the other major points. I'm very concerned about the pervious pavement relative to the cypress trees. It wouldn't bother me to condition some kind of performance aspect of the trees every 5 years or a periodic review over time to ensure that they're going to be there. I'm not concerned about the charging stations. Like I said, to me, it's a great gift. But to me, it's actually a benefit to the owner because I think it's going to attract a certain clientele that we don't have the capacity to do now. I would prefer that we had, there's a section, that section I was talking about around the bike parking. One of the beautiful things about this is this really is, after you go under the overpass, this really is the first thing you're going to see. And I think that landscaping and the retention pond creates a beautiful open space there that's sort of a new gateway to that beach block as you go down. And there's something about seeing the fence there with the bikes is kind of it's kind of a detrimental thing to what I think was given extreme care with the rest of it. But that's kind of a minor point. And I'm thinking of that more as someone driving past it than coming into the facility. I'm not sure where I would say to put the bikes. It strikes me that that's kind of remote. If I'm going to lock up my bike out there, and if it's a bike of any consequence, I'm not sure that feels like a safe place to me. I'm not a biker, so I don't. I'm a walker. I'll walk down that bike path when it's done. But those are my main concerns.
Susan?
I don't know that I have a lot to offer in terms of technical stuff. Certainly read through all the material and the reports. I feel like the applicants have gone out of their way to explore both your concerns from last year and an interest in the community and what they can add. In terms of the height, again, I think this is project specific. I do not see that as something that's going to take over the town, because it's clearly something we don't want. I see this as one of the few places in town that this height of project could happen, because it's probably one of the lower places that exist in town that isn't, you know, completely in a floodplain or fill area. Certainly respect the concern about the trees. Don't know how close the overexing will have to go to them, but that would be something I think, again, could be looked at. I do appreciate the economic value of a project like this. I know we have had requests for blocks of rooms that we have not been able to accommodate. When groups have wanted to come to this town, whether they were environmental groups wanting to do certain activities or business groups wanting a block of 40 rooms, and we just couldn't provide that for them. I think that's significant, and I also think there's a broader significance, again, to how we're painted as a community and whether we appreciate the kind of work that local people are willing to put into this town, and we as a planning department and a planning commission are willing to help get decent projects through. We've certainly got a reputation that says this is not a place to do this kind of business, and we have some prospective projects in the pipeline that will probably be looking at this and seeing how we work with this. And that's not to say that we should be held hostage by that, but we have a local family who wants to do a local investment in our town, which will provide jobs, which will add to the bottom line of sustaining ourselves as a community. They seem to be willing to work with us on reasonable requests and concerns. I don't have an electric car. they're very expensive. Yet. I don't drive that far either, so it might work for me someday if I could ever afford one. And I appreciate the charging stations for that. I appreciate the prospect of putting in kinds of wiring that would allow it to happen down the road if it becomes more feasible financially. I would not support requiring more than two of the fast chargers. I think anything that we do that enhances that entrance to town, anything that we do that enhances any entrance to this town is a positive. Right now it's chain link fences and flying garbage. I mean, it's not a pretty entrance, any of them, that we have to this town. It's very sad. So this takes one of the gateways and does something attractive with it, says there's something here beyond a wasteland. I think, and I'm an open space person, don't get me wrong. I appreciate those spaces. When they are nurtured and they are part of our plan, I think some open spaces like that become hazards and become places for crime. And, you know, we're seeing things happening in our empty spaces now, even in the middle of downtown, where there are empty buildings, and what's happening is more crime is being encouraged because of that. More things are happening that folks don't like to see. So it's a kind of infill that I think, to again sustain ourselves as a community, we are going to have to embrace at some level. I do like the idea that we could move that mechanical stuff off the roof, hide it a little better. That does reduce the height. I think that's all I have to say for now, except again that I think there are intangibles that this project brings to the town, even to the point of helping out when that roundabout there comes to be, that they will be assessed for that. Those kinds of things, I think there will be a continuing benefit, and that it will be in their own interest to keep those cypress trees healthy because that is their backyard and their side yard. So okay. That's what I would have.
Jesse?
I think Michael said it on accident, maybe, but he said yet when he said about electric vehicles. So, I mean, the reality of what I see, okay, this is probably a two-year build. You know, 10 years from now, where are we going to be as a nation with electric vehicles? I think given the trends, it's safe to say that it's just only going to be increasing, and you know, to the point where I was listening to a podcast today where they're talking about 15 years we're going to have completely autonomous vehicles, you know, running this, coming in and charging themselves, maybe. Who knows? So anyway, I think it's worth talking about when we talk about public benefit. Yes, the TOT is going to be a public benefit. It's going to increase contributions to our general fund. It's going to do all of these things, and it's going to bring jobs, and it's going to bring people here, and I think all of this is great. I think this is a great project, so I don't want to get held up on nitpicking this thing. I just think, as a community, we're hearing what's the public benefit? How is the public benefiting from this 5.4-foot increase in height allowance? And I think it goes a long way to making some sort of concession, saying, okay, well, we propose 2, but we're willing to give you 3, maybe 4. Of the level 3 charters, and I think it's just more of a conciliatory tone that sort of compromise sets. And you know, I don't know that I would dig my heels in and say absolutely not, I'm gonna vote against it unless we get it. I'm just talking compromise. I'm talking hearing what the community has to say, making them feel like they got a benefit out of us deciding for them that there's an allowance given. That's out of the norm that we might not give down the street. And I think another thing I would want to throw into that height limit, to me it's all about the height. I mean, I get the screening with the trees, and to be completely frank, I kind of see a redesign possible with when they go out and look at the root structures, and they may say, hey, you know, the pervious pavers maybe shouldn't go here. Maybe we should put them somewhere else. So I think that will, as a design feature, that could work itself out. Once they identify where the root structures are and things like that. And I'm not a tree expert, so I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but I just heard what you guys were talking about. So kind of getting off point here. So 35.4 feet, I think we ought to condition that to be the absolute maximum. No mechanical, no solar, bust that 35.4. And then I think the community gets something.
Joseph?
I was challenged and intrigued during the prep for this meeting. I think my wife would probably say I was obsessed, but it was just so really interesting. And you know, of course, I was focused on the height issue as being the really at the crux of the matter. And for me, it was really kind of a two-part analysis. Which one, is there is the request being made reasonable, or is it just something absurd? And then, if it is reasonable, are the public benefits commensurate, you know, with what's being asked? And I sort of suggested, you know, what my opinion was earlier by my questions, but clearly this is a very peculiar, challenging piece of property with being in the flood zone, and it's a difficult property to develop, and I don't think that the applicant should in some sense be penalized because he's got to raise the level of his grade by 2 feet to even start building something. And likewise, as I said before, we have a history of granting up to an extra 5 feet to have a more attractive roof design, and I think that what's being done at the parapet is just that. It's providing us with a more attractive roof design. And also, very often before this commission, we've had discussions about actually a really sensitive subject, which is the need to raise the height limit in the retail area of downtown Morro Bay because of the demands of retailers present and to come. And that bumps us up right against the historic nature of the downtown. But fortunately, we don't have that problem in the applicant's commercial area because it's not historic. In fact, there's not all that much there, and what is there is in need of some revitalization, which is exactly what the applicant is proposing to do. And in terms of the diminished view, I think they did a very nice job in redesigning that southern roof line so that we don't impact the view of the rock. And the other view is essentially the view of those trees on the western border, and we're obscuring about 5 feet of that, and I don't think that's substantial. But the commissioner's point is well taken, that were those trees not there, I absolutely would find that the view was being damaged in a very serious way. But the trees are there. But it's all the more reason then, if the trees are the reason that we're allowing this, it's all the more reason to ensure that those trees are preserved, and not only preserved, but thrive. And finally, and I for one, because of my background on the commission, are really sensitive to precedent. And it is very easy to distinguish this case and have no valueless precedent because it's in a flood area. It's not in an historical part of town. There's no impact on the view. I'm not bothered at all by other applicants coming and saying, oh, by the way, we now have to have, you know, a 35-foot extension to our property. So I find the request eminently reasonable. Now, as to the commensurate public benefit, there's plenty of things, the charging station, although listening to the suggestions of adding one, it's persuasive, but I'm also sensitive to the fact that we don't want to unduly burden the applicant. So I would say, yes, put the conduit in and let the market mechanisms determine if it really makes sense to build a third or a fourth one. And likewise, the bike path is significant. I don't know how substantial it is. There's a boost to the overall economic activity in the community, but there's no data that you can't substantiate it. It's speculative, but intuitively, I think there will be a boost to the economy. And with respect to the bed tax, it would be incredible. I would find it incredible if we chose not to consider the significant revenues that will accrue to the city because of the bed taxes associated with a hotel of that size. And for me, the final consideration in terms of the public benefit is just to the degree that we have, enhanced the man-made environment of Morro Bay. Or put simply, there's this building, and we're going to live with it for about 100 years. Is it a good-looking building that we like, and most people will like? And for the most part, it is. But as you can tell from my earlier comments, I had a few comments. And one was the superstructure visible from the roof, but that seems to be been addressed or will be addressed. the absence of a kind of a uniform siding at the very back of the building, and I think I would like to see that happen. And the final consideration is I would like to like the exterior look of the building more than I do. And I think that's my own particular bias, where I would like to see less flat surface on the facades and more detail and less plaster. But I am aware that that may be my own peculiar idiosyncratic take on architecture. So I'm certainly not going to inflict or insist on that. But I am curious as to what the other commissioners think about that, because in my opinion, we could make the building look significantly better without seriously enhancing the cost, because I'm not proposing anything structural. And those are my thoughts.
Okay, great.
Oh, wait, I do have one other thing. Okay. One other thing. This is with respect to the traffic study that was done in the, whatever you call that thing, the mitigated, I never get the title right, the mitigated negative declaration. Pretty clearly, this development is going to increase the traffic at the intersection of 41 and the highway. And anyone who has spent any time there at 2:30 or 3 o'clock knows that what you see are teenagers engrossed in conversations with each other, completely immersed in their cell phones, and oblivious to the risk associated with crossing that intersection. And this development logically will increase that risk by putting more cars going through the intersection, added to the fact that many of those drivers will not live in Morro Bay, will not be familiar with the intersection, and the peculiar patterns that you have to observe to actually get through that section safely. And in reading the traffic comments, the only thing I came across was that it was said that, yes, there is a plan to build a roundabout, and it is partially funded, and someday we will have a roundabout. Well, you know, given the added risk, I don't think that's a satisfactory conclusion. What am I getting at? I think there has to be a formal notice given to Caltrans that they will absolutely be forced to acknowledge as notice of an increased risk, and that we are urging them to reprioritize their schedule and do something sooner rather than later at that intersection. Just put them on notice, because in the worst scenario, you know, that may help litigants when they make their case that something bad happened and it should have been addressed a long time ago, and I don't want Caltrans to be able to escape liability by saying that it didn't know about this. That's my thought.
Okay, great. Okay, we've got a lot of agreement up here, and once again, there's been a lot of work on this. This project's a lot better than the project that came before us on the first go around. I'm in firm agreement that this project would not fit. And, you know, the height exemptions would not be allowed. I would not vote for them anywhere else. I've got, and the reason I'm considering it here and allowing this project is site-specific, and specifically the screening and the mass of both of those rows of cypress trees, both on the west side and the north side. Where I would really like, where I think the project falls down and would like more consideration is in the east side across here, is continuing having that screening
factor continue on the east side. Maybe even we might even lose one or two parking spaces, but I think that's a great trade-off if we could put the Monterey Cypress in these finger planters. That way we know that those trees are going to reach the height of the existing trees and will allow the screening of the building. From my reading on the tree list, some of those trees are only going to, at maturity, are only going to be 15 to 20 feet tall if they reach maturity. And this is a heavy salt induced area, and so I have serious concerns about that. But once again, I'm not a tree expert, but I can see what's there, and I can see a motif, and I can see a continuation of that. I think would be really beneficial to the community and to the project. It would give you a secluded enclave there that would really help the look of the building and the feel of the building while it's there. There are a little bit more maintenance as far as cleanup, but that would be kind of my recommendation on that. Because I don't have a doctorate in trees, I would like to have somebody review the project that is not financially incentivized to minimize what's done there, so that we get a true reading. And I'm not casting any aspersions or anything. We had a project that came before us on Main Street. We had four arborist reports that said cut them down. We had a fifth arborist come in and say, oh, well, we could save them if we only do this and this and this. And so it was once again a lesson, another opinion would not be bad in this. And to have it removed from the profit motive would be helpful. We could have staff pick an arborist and have the plan reviewed by them and then have it brought back for us in a report, I think. So my considerations is we need to protect those line of trees because we're mitigating I'm viewing the mitigation of the height as the sustainability of those trees and the interplanting of new trees into that existing stand, either on-site or off-site, and then also a new screening on that east side with that same motif of the cypress trees. And I don't think we're talking about, breaking anybody's bank and doing that. It's just good husbandry on that. So what I'm concerned about is damaging the roots in construction. I'm concerned about, even the pervious pavers, if they over X 30 inches down, you're going to get into the root zones of the existing trees. So I need another expert. I need a better expert to say that, is that good or is it not good? Is it going to damage those trees or not? I would like to have them look at a program of interplanting new trees, and they could be, 4-inch pots by the time those existing trees are mature and rotting and ready to be taken down, because the safety issues, those trees could be 20 feet tall. And so we would have the start on the next generation of trees to protect this building for the life of its building. And that's so having the construction, the paving plans, the interplanting schedule of new cypress with the old cypress is the only way that I would allow allow a height exemption at this point. The other thing I think, if the architect could look at minimizing that the freeboard on the inside of the roof structure of that parapet to where it's the absolute minimum,
you know, at the highest roof point, you know, have maybe 6-inch freeboard there that would still give you screening for a 5-degree cant on a solar panel there, and you would never see it from street level. You'd never see it from the off ramps, and you wouldn't see it even from Highway 1. But that would possibly bring the height of the building down another 1.5 feet or maybe even 2 feet, if at all possible. So I'd like to, you know, request that to be looked at once again. The solution of putting the increasing the parapet height on the front shed, you know, replacing that shed with a parapet and putting the HVA systems, I think that's a good solution to get the equipment off the roof and reduce the height of the building there. I've got to commend the Patels for investing in the community and putting their faith and hard work and trust that Morro Bay is a place that's worth it. And I think it is, and I want to see it succeed. So I appreciate the effort. I think having the infrastructure, such as you know for each of those level 2 chargers, have the, you know, upsize the conduit one, you know, another inch, so that they could have. You could pull the wire for a level 3 charger in there when it's appropriate. I think that's a no-brainer. So where are we with the rest of the stuff? So we're also, once again, we're using the shading. We're using the existing tree line that's there to mitigate some of the shading. So once again, we're using an off-site resource to mitigate an on-site problem. We've been told we can't do that. So I think we need to, you know, this brings up that we need to make sure that there's a plan that supports those trees in situ and has a recommendation for replacing them if there's a, you know, another pine beetle or something, an infestation that threatens them, because that's what's mitigating the height of this building.
Can I ask, given that they're not on the applicant's property and they are on the school district property, which is like its own little government, how much sway do we have there?
Well, there's also
potentially, it could be an unenforceable condition.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that being said, we have conditions on previous high school properties to have those hedge rows of trees maintained. So I think we have all the levers we need in those areas, and maybe having, you know, the applicant participate and offer up replacement trees, a few of them, you know, might be where we go with this. So it's more of a collaborative thing as opposed to the city said go plant trees on a property that you know, this applicant doesn't own. I mean, I get what you're saying, and that's, you know, I think we can probably work something out with the high school. They're supposed to be coming back to us with their overall planting plan. They just had some staff turnover stuff that's kind of delayed that from happening, but I do anticipate us getting that, and then maybe as part of that conversation with them, we can, you know, suggest that we have an opportunity to provide some trees, where trees along this row at least, to die or something like that. And we can work that number out with the applicant and how that works out if you're interested in conditioning the project.
Could be part of their agriculture program too, you know, FFA or something might want to get involved.
We also have the ability of maybe putting one in, a couple in there and a couple in there, you know, even if they're encroach onto the property line at some point in the future. I think, you know, there's the ability, and if we go further back, there's some other planning areas where we may be able to put, intersperse, you know, a few on there on the hotel's property, you know, that just to maximize them. But Scott, I think your suggestion is great. It's more of a collaborative approach than an enforcement approach. So
If I can make a comment on that in the same note, I mean, if it sounds like what Scott's saying is that we already have mechanisms where we could require this of the high school due to an existing agreement. So why burden the Patels with this when we can maybe possibly ask them for some consideration somewhere else? I guess is my point.
I mean, it's kind of up to you. It's kind of, you know, belts and suspenders.
Yeah.
Right? If you want to direct that the planting of the trees would, if feasible, take place in the location on the high school property along that row, so that we are preserving the thing that makes this project feasible in the first place in this location, because you have that, the view's already blocked there, right? If you want to do that, we're happy to, you know, engage the high school. We emailed them today about some of these things, and they're going to get us some answers about some of the stuff next week. They had some folks that were out of town. So we're having an ongoing, you know, conversation with them, and we can certainly, you know, intersperse this with that and to see what their, you know, receptiveness is to that. They're already required to do this. So if a tree there died, we'd be like, okay, there's one that you need to replace. We could do that. But like you were talking about, we should look at the feasibility of maybe interplanting younger trees, if that makes sense. I mean, that's one of the things, like if we're going to have a third party look at something like an arborist, right. We would want to have them weigh in on that, because we don't want to plant trees that aren't going to live or make sense, or how you plant them, that type of thing.
No, this is what we need. You know, I'm just specifying things that I think that we should look at and get the expert opinions on that. And then I think we definitely need to upgrade our tree list, the city tree list. So we're, you know, the other thing too is talking about the undergrounding of utilities. You know, the one, you know, they've agreed to underground the utilities on the south side and have balked on the east side. So,
well, I mean, from the get-go, that seemed unrealistic.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Okay, I just, it was something I think we needed to discuss about. The other thing, too, is if we're putting trees up in here, you've got a power line going up there, so they will need to be interspersed into these pockets. So, you know, what does the commission feel about allowing a parking reduction for the possible installation of trees there, cypress trees?
I certainly would be in favor of that. My typical response, you know, automobiles are a blight on the environment, so I'm not defending.
Not electrical ones.
And
just to be clear, those trees on the west side of the property, on the school property, if they were to fail or fall, the school would have a responsibility to replace those trees. Is that, am I hearing that right? Or?
I believe that to be the case, given the previous approvals that go back through the years on the site. You know, okay. The intent's always been that those things be replaced, and they're supposed to be coming back to us with a plan that does that.
And
it's an inventory of all of the trees that are on the site as well. So I think they're doing all of those things right now. We haven't received that report yet.
I have a bit of unease with that as a solution, because I was going to bring this up at the end of the meeting. But my friend and I were walking past the high school to actually look at the property and just walk. And as we were walking by the school, he commented on how he swims at the pool. And he remarked to me he thought it was curious, because many times when he's entering the pool area or the parking lot or leaving, he's in amongst students. There is no security. And I remember very distinctly when we approved the pool, he commented on how there needed to be adequate security. And we were, I believe, I'm sort of vague about it, but I believe we were assured that there would be. And to add to that, he was swimming in the pool when they had a lockdown drill. And when he asked the lifeguards, who are county employees, what they should do, they said, "We have not been trained or instructed." So there's a certain negligence on the part of, be it county or
city
or school, district. And, you know, I'm not confident that they're going to care as much about these trees as we do.
I was just going to comment that relative to Commissioner Luhr's idea about the east side having cypress, I've never put a thing into bookings.com, give me a view of an expressway. You know, it's usually I think looking into the trees would be a much more pleasant screen, in addition to screening some of the noise off Route 1, yeah, than the smaller species would.
Question. So, I mean, and I don't know anything about trees. So are cypress very shallow? How's the root system? Where
I,
is it going to?
I just looked it up. They have a deep tap root, and they have shallow surface roots that are not really affected, and they don't uplift. Because I was concerned about you put one in a parking lot, or right, you're going to mess up, and apparently they are very good for not messing up surface structures like.
So then, would it areas. Be safe to presume that the 30-inch overex wouldn't affect the deep roots like we think?
Okay. Should not affect the taproot.
Yeah, just we need confirmation. I mean, I would love to see it not affected, but we just need confirmation. And there's also, you've got a whole line on the east side and the north side where you're going to have a parking lot right next to them. So we've already got that issue on all the rest of the property. But, yeah, that's great. Okay, so where do you want to go with this? Do we want to? Okay.
So regarding my specific request, I take it that the other commissioners don't feel the same way as I do about the sort of lack of detail on the facade. That's one thing to think of. That's screening at the back of the building, and my notion of writing.
I think we had agreement on maybe wrapping the south end and the north end with Corten.
Okay.
I thought we had some head nods, is what I saw.
Okay.
So we'll open up the public comment, and can we get Kathy and the architect? Would you mind stepping to the mic?
Thank you, and I wanted to ask you a couple of questions while you were discussing this, so we make sure that we are. Understand what you're wanting and a couple things. So first, answer the question of materials. Sure, the architect said that he can, on that north west corner, he can actually take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of questions was dealing with the arborist and looking for reports so that we can check on the cypress roots. We're talking about doing that prior to a construction, not a prior to city council request. I mean, are you not asking us to go out and get an arborist report before the city council meeting? Is that right? That's the first question.
That's a good question.
Second question is, I'm hearing about some possible more plantings on site. So my question to you is, would you be willing to recommend that we would be okay to deviate from the parking space requirement for the overall project if we added additional landscaping area and took away the parking, because we're at 92 and the requirement is 92, so we'd have to fall below that number, and would that be okay with you? And then the last comment I just want to make, on the east side of the property, there is a city waterline easement. So Rob Leivik has already instructed us that he does not want things along that east side in that waterline easement. So originally there was a little block wall, and he said no. So when you're talking about tree locations, other locations on site, just recognize that we have that city water easement, and the city won't let us put some trees in that section.
Okay. On the question on that, I don't have the, you know, is that easement? Okay, for first question about reducing the number of parking, so I think we have agreement that for cypress trees along that east side that would create a screening mechanism, we would accept a reduced parking number of spaces. So, and then on, so where I'm talking about is in these bulb outs, you know, right there.
Mm-hmm.
So is that within the easement area?
No, the easement runs parallel, right, exactly where the pointer's going. The easement runs through there. So that's why we've been really careful about the landscaping that we've proposed over there, is because of that. And I guess then also I would just ask for flexibility as far as the type of trees that we plant in there too, because we do need to be careful with the space that we have allowed, and there also the landscape architect said we have to be careful about the spacing in between trees,
right,
so the other plant materials can grow effectively. So we just need some flexibility with that.
The site plan looks like a 10-foot easement along that entire
yes.
east side.
Yeah. 10-foot, yes.
Yeah, I would only consider a reduction in parking spaces to allow cypress trees to go in, to continue the motif, because you along here you have a line of cypress trees right at the property line of the high school. So essentially you would be continuing that line of cypress trees along there on the east side, if that's feasible. If it's not feasible, then I think then we'll need to talk again.
Okay, and the other point is we're building this beautiful building
right.
with all these great materials, and we're trying to encourage people to get off the highway and stay here. So if we cover it up with trees where you can't see it, we're actually taking away what we're trying to accomplish.
But you're also creating more of an enclave there, you know, kind of a little more secluded spot. Would you rather listen to the trees or listen to the traffic?
Yeah, well, there's all these trade-offs. And we,
yeah.
you know, we are trying to plant some trees over on the other side so that we can provide the screening and actually, you know, so we do have a good landscape plan.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay.
You know, a lot of things to juggle.
A lot of things to juggle. I agree.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Sean Green, Morrowbay. My understanding is I get to come back up if you reopen to public comment.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes.
Okay. There looks like there's six fingers there on the east side of the building. You might be able to consolidate those and just have three, and for the sake of planting three cypress there, and maybe one on each end as well. I definitely don't support reducing that parking number, because assuming the hotel is sold out and the general public is using all of those EV stations, which they're entitled to, then we're looking at displacing multiple cars somewhere on Highway 41. Thanks.
Okay, great. Thank you. Would anybody else like to speak to that? Just like to speak to those issues? Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll close the public comment again.
I have to agree with that. I don't really want to see a reduction in parking spaces. I get the idea of the screening. I think it's a great thought. I just don't think at the expense of parking. I think when you're one to one already, people are already going to be parking in places they're not supposed to. Hopefully, it's not at the high school. I would not support reducing the number of parking spaces.
Okay.
Was there any requirement to have those little islands per it? Because there was some code thing in there about
that. Yes, per the parking lot design standards, it requires
right.
to have them every five spaces.
So there's not really a possibility to say every 10 spaces and then a bigger island.
Well, you have a PD permit in front of you. You can deviate from the standard, you know, if you think it provides a better project than otherwise would be achieved through compliance. So. And maybe that's to get the cypress trees. It's sort of up to the Planning Commission to make
mm-hmm.
that decision. And if you were spacing them out more, then you wouldn't have the issue that Commissioner Barone raised, which is losing spaces. You spread them out more, then maybe you're maybe adding a space, or maybe not, just depending on how they align on the site. But if you're having larger trees, then having more space addresses the concern of the applicant as well that she raised when she was up here about shading out other plantings that they might otherwise have there that aren't going to grow now, you know, as well. So, you know, it's a... she's not kidding. It's a little bit of a balancing game there, I guess, with some of this.
One of the things about the larger trees, which I'm in support of, is we asked the applicant to change the facade. And so that facade is basically from that first gray box up on top down. So if we would use any larger trees past the fourth finger from the left... or to the left of the second gray box extending up to the top, we'd be blocking the area we just asked him to open up so we could get the view of the rock. So I think the idea of keeping the larger trees to the
mm-hmm.
the north half of the east line is probably prudent.
Yeah, but...
But you could still do what Mr. Green suggested. I think trading off and making some of those wider so that you
mm-hmm.
Have more capacity to have larger trees on that end is a good idea.
Okay, so how do you guys want to handle this? Do you want to make...
I think we take Mr. Green's idea. I mean, me personally, you know, one at either end and then maybe two or three in the middle there and decrease the number of fingers and just make them bigger and don't lose parking spaces.
Okay, I agree with that too. But what I was talking about... okay, what I was talking about was do we want to see this come back to us before it goes to council, or do we want to condition this, or have our suggestions and then have it go to council and have a report come back to us on what the solutions were?
I think that we've outlined the problems, right, and possible solutions, and I think staff has heard the range of things that we have preference for, which is the larger trees, you know, the northern part of the site, the care for the trees. But I would trust council to take those things and craft the final piece, yeah, with a report coming back. That would be my preference. I don't want to hold up the applicant.
Yeah. And certainly we're happy to report back, to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? I'm sorry, go ahead.
So, Scott, do you have what you need from us, or do we need to put these into conditions?
So the things that I have that you requested to this point would we've had a lot of discussion on the plantings along the east side there, preference to move those planter areas around to, a little bit of leeway on the staff side to work with them to, achieve larger trees, cypress trees preferably, toward maybe the middle to back half of the lot, maybe not towards, as you get towards the front where you, right, run into the view corridor thing. I think that makes sense to me.
Yep.
Probably preference not to lose parking spaces, so I would, move those spaces around to do what makes sense without losing parking spaces. That would be where we would be at on that. We would have an arborist review, third-party arborist review the planting plans, landscape plans related to the trees, as it relates to activations that are taking place for the permeable pavers in the areas adjacent to the existing cypress trees to make sure we're not impacting, the root zones in those locations to the detriment to the health of the trees. Happy to do that.
And where the pavers are going, so maximize the,
Yep. Let's see. We'll work and have discussions with the high school about and the applicant related to what we can come up with related to interplanting on the high school site, having them perhaps offer up a few trees to be planted in that location to sort of offset the requirement for the high school to do that. Now one of the things that Chair Luer came up with was the reducing the height of the parapet. None of the rest of you have made any comments related to that. And I would imagine the concern there would be, we're not reducing it and then making more of the infrastructure on the roof visible, meaning the solar panels, right? I would think, right, we would want that to be obscured, so we wouldn't want the parapet to be any lower than is necessary to obscure those, or?
My take would be 35.4, period, as long as they don't bust it.
Okay, but if we can reduce the height of the parapet, from what point do we pick the observation point to be obscured? Would it be from the highway one? Would it be from the property edge, 6 feet above the property edge?
As Commissioner Lucas said, you're up on the hill, it's always visible.
You're gonna see all of it.
But I think the idea when the concern was
from the
height. Correct me if I'm wrong, was right, to reduce the height if possible, but you do have the solar panels that are gonna be on the roof, so I would imagine you'd want the parapet going up to at least the level of that, perhaps not exceeding the 35.4 that Commissioner Brown indicated, but that's what we'd be looking,
okay,
at. Does that make sense, or do you want something else? I mean, if you do, you should have an internal discussion amongst commissioners about where you want to go with it.
To me, it's the local Route 1 view to it. When we crest over the hill past Morro Bay Boulevard, you're going to see the top of whatever's on this roof anyway,
yep,
as you come down the hill. So to me, it's more about the local impact of the facade relative to the aesthetics of the highway experience while you're looking for that peak.
Okay.
I would agree with that, too.
And so would I.
Jesse?
I don't know if I can picture it, so I'll say yes.
Okay. Okay, so and then we want to remove that shed roof at the front. We're going to create some sort of parapet wall there to place the HVAC units,
right,
in there as opposed to on the roof, right? So we're,
yes,
taking them off the roof. We're going to put the infrastructure in for additional level 3,
right,
chargers.
If we could, I can't believe this bizarre world where I'm the one pushing for EV chargers, but
I think at the very least, maybe ask for a third. I mean, that to me doesn't seem out of line.
Jesse, what I see is going to happen here is they're going to get two in, and then they're going to get four, and then they're going to get six.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make them money.
Yeah, that's what I
think. You know, and there was a Thanksgiving, there was a four-hour wait at Madonna for Teslas to charge.
Well, I mean, my limited electrical knowledge is, I mean, they're fundamentally different. So a level three is going to be DC, so you're going to have a transform.
No, it's AC, and then it converts to DC at the charging unit.
So it's easily modified later.
You pull for a level three charger, you pull a 200-amp circuit. For a level two charger, you pull a 40 to 50 amp circuit.
So they're going to need to be looking at these and the in the electrical planning stages and have 1600 amps.
And be able to have the conduit to the box.
Okay.
To the panel. So, like Scott said, to have the infrastructure in.
Okay. So I'm seeing heads nod at me.
Okay. Well, so what does that mean specifically, though? I mean, are we talking about they have to increase the size of the switchgear to accommodate up to four level three chargers? Because, I mean, if you don't think about it in the switchgear planning stage and you only have 800 amps and you require 200 per, I mean, you're only going to get two, period, unless you upgrade your switchgear. But who's going to do that after the fact? So I don't know. That's just me thinking out loud.
It's a fair point.
My own two cents is there's enough of these being established now that Commissioner Lure mentioned a couple of the groups that work with you to secure the cost of charging. You know, Cal Poly uses ChargePoint, the one I'm most familiar with. I don't know what Quest is, but there's enough of this organizational structure with those things that you can see what the payback period is for these. Those are all level twos, but like I'm saying, my guess is the public convenience is level three. That's what's going to get the people stopping in Morro Bay who would drive past. The occupants of the hotel are probably fine with level two because they're going to have 8 hours overnight to charge while they're asleep, even if they're downtown.
So I guess my bigger point is, okay, so we're not going to require them to put in more than the two level threes that they've offered to do graciously. Thank you, by the way. I don't want to seem ungrateful here, but what I'm saying is during this design phase, I'm wondering if we should include in the electrical design that they have the capacity to expand to at least a minimum of four ampacity-wise. That's my point.
I think that's fair.
We can put that in there.
Yeah. Do we have agreement on that? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Carrying the core 10 steel around the north end of the building. I saw everybody nodding heads when we talked about that. I think most of you mentioned that.
And we also talked possibly the south end, and I think we would need the...
You wanted more on the south end?
I
wasn't following.
That?
I didn't catch that.
Okay.
I said north end. They said yes, and he said south end as well.
Okay.
So we're good on the north end?
Yeah, good on the north
okay.
end.
Okay. And I didn't have anything beyond that. The last thing I had here was the reducing parking spaces, but we're not going down that road, so I'm getting rid of that.
Just my fairly bizarre addition of the written notice to Caltrans.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to respond to you, Commissioner Agrafia. It's not a Caltrans project. It involves Caltrans because it's in their right-of-way, and they get review authority over what we put in their right-of-way, but it actually is a city project. Funded partially through money through SLOCOG, and the city's got to come up with the remaining amount of money. It wouldn't become a, I mean, I guess it could at some point in the future become a Caltrans project when they find it to be an issue of concern, but right now it's a city project, and we're working on design drawings with it right now, and we've been working with SLOCOG about identifying some additional funding sources because Caltrans, while it's not their project, weighed in on it and added some changes to it that increased the cost by about $3 million.
Probably level three chargers.
Can we show the bus locations on the parking plan? You know, just to show there's capacity to do that, even if they're not required by the permits and things.
Would the bus not fit under the porte-cochere? Porte-cochere, whatever you say.
Yeah, it probably would, but it wouldn't stay there all night.
Mm.
Yeah, that's fine. I think that can be marked.
Okay, was there anything else that
Is there anything else that I didn't cover?
I think that's got it. Did I miss anything in the review? Anybody else have any other that we talked about? Okay, you got the reduction of the parapet height if possible?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so we have a... Anybody want to discuss this or put forward a motion?
I don't know.
I think I'm ready to put forth the motion. Not too sure about formatting it. So I move to approve resolution number PC03-20, forwarding a favorable recommendation to City Council to adopt a mitigated negative declaration, SCH number 20191290978, with mitigation and monitoring program, and conditionally approve concept precise plan approval of coastal development permit CDP 19-039 and conditional use permit CUP 19-13 for new construction of 56,538 square foot 83 guest room hotel located at 295 Atascadero Road, Morro Bay Hotel, with conditions as outlined by planning director.
That works.
Okay. That works. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
Jinx.
Any discussion?
Who seconded? I need one. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any discussion?
Thank you for bringing this project to us.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's challenging to take a project of this scale. We have a lot of wonderful, really small projects that come through here, and this is one of those ones that is a major investment on your part, and I thank you for seeing the opportunity that's in that block that I think is really very helpful for the future of the city, having that vision to do a good job on it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that speaks for the whole commission here, and thanks for, I think we, it's painful, but I think we've got a much better project than the first one that came through. And that'll serve, you know, I think that'll serve to your benefit. You know, I hope it'll serve to your benefit over the long haul. Stuff. So, once again, thanks for all your work on it. And can we call the question?
Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart.
Yes.
Stewart. Commissioner Barone.
Aye.
Commissioner Agrafia.
Aye.
Chairperson Luer.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again. Okay. Item number C, we have new business. Does anybody want to take a break before we move on? Or? Okay. Okay, let's roll it. Item number C, we have new business. We have none. D is we have unfinished business. We have a lot, but none scheduled for tonight. Planning commissioners' comments and future agenda items.
So I would really like to propose that we address Mr. Green's comments about developing a list of public benefits that, and I don't quite know how it would be done because I really believe in things being relevant to the project and the area that they're at. So in other words, we couldn't tell Mr. Patel to build a public restroom in the downtown when this project is here, or even on the waterfront area, you know, at the end of 41, because that's going to be the project for that person. But I think it's a really good idea for us to look at that. I would either see that as possibly an agenda item or developing an ad hoc committee to look at it with staff and see what we could come back with.
Okay. What does everybody think about that? I'm
thinking that we might be able to handle that in the ad hoc committee or the subcommittee for the design development, you know, design guidelines, commercial design guidelines. I think that could be thrown in there, and then that way we could create a list of potential public benefits for each zone. Because how I see that going is we would have, you know, we've already got it laid out in the plan that we've got our 10 zones. And we would we would codify our guidelines for each zone. And so this way we could put public benefits that we would hope to achieve in each one of those zones that would be pertinent at least to that zone.
I just think one of the things that he had, and again, this is kind of a comment, but he had so many things that were network type things, the bike path system.
Right.
You know, and that's what struck me, and I was really back and forth in my head, do I want to condition this with that? Do I want to condition with that? But it's to the hotel's advantage to have that bike system really well marked. The types of people who are going to stay in that part of town would be perfect people to get a bike to take on that system. And we surely, I think, would rather have people on the west side of Route 1 than right. along Main Street on the bikes. That lane on the Main Street that's running from north to south scares me to death because of the trash and how narrow it is. But
well, creating a bike share or scooter share program, you know, electric scooter program or something, it seems like almost a no-brainer that that would be centered on, you know, hotels and the state parks and, you know, where people are staying.
But the whole thing about the network of signs and making sure the pavement, I mean, right. that intersection is so brutal. And I was just thinking, you know, should there be some better painting on Atascadero Road to get you across Atascadero Road? You know, is that something they should pick up? And I don't know. It's sort of like the Cloisters has that subdivision thing for landscaping and lighting and things like that. It's almost like you want to look at some of these areas and say there's a specific network aspect here that everybody in that might be contributing to. So I think there's lots of great ideas to talk about where the right place to put them is, whether it's in the ad hoc committee or get a set of things that any of the ad hoc committee zones start to take a look at.
Yeah.
You know, definitely part of the circulation plan.
Yeah, so I'm like, I think, you know, the plan is to, you know, the next meeting we're going to, you know, bring you the new rules for the Planning Commission that were adopted by the City Council. And then the following meeting, you know, at least you'll have the guidelines for how we bring these things forward, because when they're not on work plans that are for the Commission, we have to take them to Council. I don't think it's an issue. I think they're happy if we're going to form subcommittees to make it happen. I think they're okay with that. They'll just want to know that I have capacity to add some staff time to it. We do have an intern too as well that can add capacity for us to do things like that. We didn't previously have one because we had some new staff. Willow, you know, was a new full-time you know, person, and training, you know, multiple people at one time is a little difficult. So we wanted to get her up to speed enough to where she can function on her own. And then now we have capacity in a new intern, and she's doing really well. And we have some capacity to throw at things like this. To assist. So I think that's kind of where we'll be going, moving this forward. So probably a couple meetings out before we have a final, you know, decision on it, but we'll go over what the requirements are for that. And then assuming we get head nods from the commission out of that process, the chair gets the one that gets to convey the request to this city council, and it can be through a letter from me, basically. But that's kind of how the process is set up to work, and then, you know, they'll agendize it and talk about it and give us direction. So, yeah.
Okay. Great. Exciting. Scott, do you have any other?
Nothing besides that. That was what I was going to speak to, since you had made a request earlier, and then Commissioner Stewart brought that up. I was like, God, timing was good to at least, you know, let you know that was coming up at the next meeting, and that's what I have it scheduled for anyway. And so.
Okay.
I had one question. Is there any update on the applicant who was developing the Quonset hut on Main? I walked by there frequently, and, you know, the...
Yeah. So I don't know exactly what happened with that. I was talking with Nancy Hubbard, who's a planner on that project, you'll recall, and they came back in and were making some requests for changes to their plan internally. The plan they came up with and brought before the Planning Commission ended up being more expensive than they didn't have the money to carry out all the improvements to create the residence inside that was going to be on that kind of loft level thing. And they were trying to, you know, make changes to put the living area down on the ground floor, and we said no, because it's supposed to be commercial. And so they were working through what that might look like. I think, you know, and there was, I think a portion of the residential unit was down on the ground floor, but they wanted to move the whole thing down there and expand it, and then pretty much now you had no commercial area. So We were pushing back a little bit there, saying, you know, hey, this is really a commercial property, and you're supposed to have the commercial use, and it's not supposed to be, you know, like that. So, and I don't think we've heard back from them since they met with Nancy several months ago. So I think they've done much of anything.
Could I ask a question that's more procedural, I guess? In the conditions on the permits, so if it's a minor change, it can go to you and you can decide. And then if it's not a minor change, it says the filing of an application for a permit amendment subject to planning commission review. What about with a project like this where we initially review and approve it to go to City Council, but City Council is the one that has the final say on it? Does it go back to them or does it go back to us?
I mean, we could try to fast-track it and take it directly back to Council if there was an amendment that was major, but I think I would probably take it back through the Planning Commission because the City Council relies on the Planning Commission to review development applications and to give them recommendations when it's like this. And so it would be the appropriate process would be I would come here with it, you get your recommendation for whatever the change might be, and then that would be forwarded up to Council, and Council would make whatever the final decision is. That's typically how that would happen. You might have seen us do slightly different processes for these things down on the waterfront, but that's just because the waterfront's an entirely different animal. But that's normally how it would go.
Just a reminder, I won't be at the March 3rd meeting. Just a reminder. Yeah. So,
okay.
See you better.
Okay. All right. So everybody's okay. We'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting here at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street, on February 18th, 2020 at 6 p.m. Thanks, everybody. Yeah. Okay, thanks, guys. That was...
I want to say thank you so much for all your great questions and your knowledge.